wishful income official from the National Treasury. Mr. Mohajani, Deputy Director General, and Mark Lijek. Thank you very much. I see the parliamentary officer is here. Welcome. I wish to welcome our support staff as well. And thank you for coming to this meeting today of the Standing Committee on Appropriations. We are receiving a presentation from the National Treasury on the third quarter expenditure report 2015-16, and later in the program after the deliberations we will also consider the and adopt the committee's minutes. But before we go forth, let me indicate the apologies. We have only two apologies. Honorable Nyalungu, who is on sick leave until about mid-May, and Honorable McLaughlin from the DA. Shall we accept those apologies, Honorable Nyalungu? Accepted. Thank you very much. Let us hand over to National Treasury to brief us. I see two hands. Honorable Natasha Lowe from the EFF.
Thank you, Chair. I just want to express my disappointment. We have only received this presentation this morning, and for us to go through it now at this short notice, I think it mustn't be allowed, and it mustn't continue like this, because we only, and I think the letter from the portfolio secretary to National Treasury stated that they, we need to have the presentation no later than Thursday, 12 o'clock, 7th April, and we only received the presentation this morning. I did yesterday, in fact, when I see I didn't receive the presentation yet from Darren, asking where is the documentation for this specific meeting. We need to prepare and go through documentation prior to a meeting. And we cannot expect that we get a presentation at 9:30 and 10 o'clock you must come and deliberate on the very same presentation. I think this mustn't be allowed to go forward as said. That is my disappointment. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Malcolm Sick.
Okay, well, that is exactly the point that I wanted to raise. And I'm not only disappointed, it's just unacceptable. It cannot be, and it's not the first time. Every time we get this problem, we have this problem. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think we need a plausible explanation from Treasury why we only get it now. I mean, this is a document. Even if it's, in my view, and it might not be the view of the others, the presentation we understand, it might be tweaking it and trying to just finalize it, but here's a document. I mean, what am I expected to do with this thing? I get it now. So it's just unacceptable, Honorable Chair.
Honorable Sally Wamadlaoba.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Chair, we can't say it more. To say this is really unacceptable. You know, as members of Parliament, we must come to the meeting prepared, have read thoroughly, you know, the documents, and understand and make a positive contribution because we have read. And I think in future, if we get a document in the morning, we are not going to access it. It must just go back. Because as members of parliament, we have to read. One of those times that they were saying that politicians don't read. We want to read and come here prepared. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Sheila Shopperstone.
Thank you, Chairperson. The purpose of this committee is to follow the money. And the President of the Republic has asked us, requested us to do things differently. We cannot go on conducting rituals because, you know, what is happening here, receiving ritual, documents at the last minute, I think we're not doing oversight. It's a ritual. And we are serious. We're members of parliament sent here by the people to come and represent them. And we need to actually make sure that we are alive to the situation of the world today. There is an economic meltdown. There is slow growth. And as members of parliament, we must show our seriousness about this. We cannot just go on, you know, coming to committees, saying goodbye, thank you, you have made a report. We need to actually read and research and discuss these things with our communities, because one of our responsibility is public participation. If I get a document now seated here, when am I involving my communities? This thing has been said time and again in the last term and even now. And we are definitely not going to tolerate this anymore. If they can't give us documents, we will not have a committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me echo the sentiments of my colleagues here. Chair, whilst I appreciate the presentation provided by Treasury, I think Treasury must explain to us today what are the challenges that they face in not being able to give us these reports timeously. Now, I think my colleagues have all commented, you know, how the challenges we have in terms of receiving these documents 2 minutes and 5 minutes before, you know, having to deliberate on important issues affecting the country, and we know the state of the economy at this point in time. And I want to add, Chair, that unless we know for sure that we're going to get these presentations on time, we must not even schedule these meetings, Chair, because we're going to come here, it's going to be a wasted exercise. I could have been in police committee today the entire day, but I'm here because it's to do with the third quarter report and things. And you come here and you find that this information is not provided on time. So it makes it very, very difficult for us. But maybe they must explain to us today what is the difficulty they have in, after accepting an invitation, not being able to provide it timelessly. Thank you, Chair.
Treasury, you have heard the sentiments of the committee. And I do want to say that indeed the members are correct. We need to receive information in time. Although I'm advised that this bigger document was made available a few some time back. This bigger one. In the pigeonholes. However, let me say that indeed members are correct in expressing the sentiment that we need to receive information timelessly, including, of course, this PowerPoint presentation. It has got to come in time so that members are able to also integrate whatever is in this thick document into the summary. Now, one member is asking whether you could explain why sometimes you don't give us documentation in time. Is there some challenge in challenges of capacity, etc., and so on? Not that we want to understand why you are giving us information late, but perhaps we'll appreciate an explanation. However, members before they even answer, I do want to plead with us that let's, having expressed your sentiment, let's continue with the meeting, let's get the information, raise whatever questions we can at this point in this meeting raise, and as we dig deeper into the thicker document, we will also be able to raise questions even in writing, so that members can receive as much information and clarity as is possible. I say this, members and officials from Trade Treasury, because you must understand that when you give us a quarterly report on the performance, especially of departments, these members must begin to follow up with those departments. They must continue to exercise oversight over the financial performance of the department. One member is emphasizing the point that part of our mandate is to make sure that there is public participation on matters relating to budgets, to expenditure, to outcomes. And if we are limited in terms of receiving information on time, that presents problems. And as you would know, before we can engage any other department in terms of their budgets and expenditure, we come to you first. So it is critical that National Treasury and the Standing Committee on Appropriation have a better way of communicating early, engage extensively on issues that might not be clear, so that we move forward together. And I'm certain that you yourselves as National Treasury would like to see departments performing better all the time. Can I hand over to yourself?
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members, good morning. Maybe let me start by saying, Chair, on your last note, this is in our interest that you have the information, because you will be able to assist in your oversight role in ensuring that departments spend accordingly and spend appropriately in terms of voter funds and voter resources. Maybe let me first start by apologizing upfront, and I take full responsibility why you only take or got the presentation this morning, because it's solely my responsibility. This presentation has been available, was long time available. I mean, this committee, if you remember, Chair, it got rescheduled, so we were ready well in advance, and that's why this document was, we made sure that more than a month ago was available to members. But from my side, I really apologize that you didn't get the presentation early. The presentation is the same. It's just no different. It's just that we lifted small little issues that we want to bring to the attention of the committee. But I take full responsibility, and we'll make sure, members, that you did raise this thing before, and that's why this time around we made sure that you get the document, the real document, the month in advance. In the last committee, when we were here, you echoed the same sentiment, but we apologize profusely, and we will make sure that in future you get the document on time. Let me just make a few opening remarks just before I go to the slide. I think, you know, just picking up from the last engagements with you, that we have decided, and it was in our interest also after listening to you, to change our mode of engagement with the department. And we wanted to be more inquisitive, we wanted to be more probing, and also wanted to be more engaging, because we realized that in some cases you don't have the liberty of the committee to call departments, all of them at the same time. So the more information we have, the better the conversation, and the better you can be prepared to engage fully with departments, and you can pick and choose which one. So what we have done in the last while is to make sure that our mode of engagement with department changes, And so I just wanted to make, you know, the committee aware. And again, before I continue, three of my colleagues are unfortunately stuck in the queue. It's a very long queue at the visitor center. They don't have access like ours. There's one from Economic Services coming through, Mr. Ricardo Andrews. There's also Mbume Hadebe from Protection Services coming through. And then there's also Yapi Jacobs from the Administrative Services coming through. And I've got Mark Bletcher, who is responsible for Health and Social Development, and Mr. Blackie here, our parliamentary office. So our mode of engagement with department changed in that we you know, instead of just, you know, meeting them on we meet them on an ongoing basis, and we have, in the last 2-3 months, become sort of an irritant to departments because you're asking more questions. As an example, the latest is the 30-day issue that members in the previous meeting indicated that, you know, what are we doing about small business suppliers, small businesses which are not paid on time. In the office of the CPO, we have set a dedicated capacity to actually be focusing on this, jointly with the efforts that are in the office of the president, I mean, in the presidency, to make sure. And these are some of the engagements as we engage departments. This one is the standard question: how many suppliers are still outstanding? How many are in the drawers? How many invoices have you processed, and so on. So. Secondly, just again as an overarching point, I think we are overall satisfied that if you look at the spending this quarter, it's above 70%, and we have, just as a benchmark, 75% is your spending. But obviously, because of various reasons, some will be a little bit under, some will be a little bit over. So, but we're not generally worried. We're just generally satisfied that expenditure broadly is about 70%. Members did raise a question the previous time that what does it mean when there's underspending of on drawings that have been, and I was at liberty to explain at the time, Chair, that it affects our borrowing limit. So we are comfortable that now that the drawings can be matched with expenditure, meaning what you borrow on a monthly basis, on a weekly basis, to actually fund your expenditure is in line. So we didn't borrow more and fund the spending is less, and as a result you're paying interest. So that's why I'm saying we are almost at par, and for us our borrowing program is managed accordingly and is on par. So I will carry on with the presentation. Just broadly to say that we, as you can see, direct charges are in page 7 of the document in detail as to what direct charges are. We at 43% of total expenditure in quarter 3 against the National Revenue Fund, and this is equivalent to almost 391 billion rand. It includes transfers to provinces, both conditional grant transfers and equitable share, and it also includes costs towards state debt costs, and so far we've spent almost 84 billion to pay state debt costs. And that paragraph, that diagram there depicts that, and the detail of what I'm indicating is in page 7 of the document, and we've listed what direct charges have been claimed against the National Revenue Fund. Slide 2. 83.6, as I said, has been spent on that, with a nominal increase, if you look at last year, of 9% or 7.1 billion compared to quarter 3 of 14-15. And this represents about 9.2% of total expenditure so far, which is the same proportion of expenditure spent servicing debt from quarter 3 in the previous financial year. So this slide simply tells you that we are not far off in terms of our planning frameworks and managing our debt and servicing our debt, that we are on par with the kind of general spending and levels of spending compared to year on year, 14-15 and 15-16. Slide 4, voted expenditure. In quarter 3, about 514 billion was, expected expenditure, and about 345 billion of that transferred to departments. About 29% is directly spent by your national government departments in particular on operations, and the majority of which is on compensation of employees. And 4% was spent on financial assets. Now, these are just general totals that members must just know that spending is on track and government is spending. Slide 5 looks at operations only across the whole of government, and personal spending is obviously the highest. It's at 11.3 billion, 94.3 billion, 98.4 billion spent on compensation of employees, representing about 65.8%, and 11.3 billion on operational spending. So there is again growth. So our growth is around 10%, if you look at year on year, which is not far off from the inflation estimates that we have, that we see our budgets growing by. So generally, as I said earlier, we are comfortable that our quarterly spending is on track and is comparable with last year, and we're not very, very worried. The same around goods and services. We spent 41.9 billion on goods and services, mainly around in police, as you know, police, defense, and correctional service and justice service consume a lot of your other operational expenditure. And about goods and services, 1.8 difference of 4.4% compared to the previous year's quarter three. Capital assets, about 9.2 billion spent, and it represents an increase of 10.3%. And the largest is around, even though you will see when you talk specifically the Department of Water, still, and the concerns that the committee raised are still relevant now, where there's some kind of slow spending in this services around water and sanitation. And later on when we deal with this, we'll see the underspending that we foresee in this department. And mainly, and I cannot mention it now, it's mainly because of project management and then just delivery of infrastructure, because of the complex nature of infrastructure delivery in this department. And obviously police and upgrading of police stations. And as the members will know, that the bulk of capital spending happens in provinces. So you won't see it in national departments, you will mainly see it in your equitable spending as transfers to provinces, both conditional grants and operational spending in provinces. Okay, the first vote around administration, 31 billion was spent, representing about 20.5% on operational spending. As I said, the 20.5% is around the police, correctional defense, and fuel, and so on. A nominal increase of 2.1 billion from the previous financial year. And the small departments like women, economic development, communications, telecom, and postal services their spending is around on average 65% of the operational budget. And I must as well mention it now, Chair, and maybe we can pick it up later, and the committee can assist us here. What we have seen, and I'm going to just bring this now, and I know when you call us again for quarter four, we'll give you the details. What we've seen in all departments is the vireman's request. Departments come to us last day of the financial year. There's a few departments that I'm fighting with right now who have asked for vireman's after the financial year ends. So the challenge that we have is that, and we'll come with quantifiable numbers per department when we meet again, now that the financial year has come to an end, to show you which departments are guilty of asking on the last day or 2 days before the financial year to wire money from one program to the other. It means, it tells you a couple of things. Budgeting is questionable, financial planning is questionable in these departments, and spending is not. So as a result, it's like departments are dumping money from other programs to certain programs. So it's a trend that you will see later on. But this is a good example that come now, and I said, remember the benchmark is around 75%. Now if these five departments are on average spending less than 65%, it tells you that the pressure you will see it next month, when we come back or after the financial results, financial year end results are available, that a lot of such departments have to wire money from some programs to the other in trying to dump money to ensure that they're spending. Transfers, a total of about 345 billion transferred by departments, and this represents a nominal growth of about 7.4%, and about 104 billion was transferred to households, 7.7%, primarily for social grant payments, and this is mainly driven by increases in grants. So this is an important program of government around the social grant payments, and if members have got questions around this, we will be able to address this later. We've transferred about 127 billion to provinces and municipalities, and this is largely driven by the local government equitable share under the program in COPSA and the human settlement grants and infrastructure grants and various health grants from the national health grant, NHI grants, and so on. So these are just total transfers. So what we have ensured through our drawing schedule, we are never late. We are always on target. So there's no province or municipality that can complain that National Treasury did not transfer money at the time when it was supposed to. This is one thing that we have perfected, and we make sure that on the day, as per our payment schedule, we transfer money. So this is on track, and again, we are not very worried about at least the transfer. What we are worried about is once transfers have been made, the efficiency of spending and ensuring that spending takes place. We've also transferred about 59.4 billion to departmental agencies and accounts, and this represents about 7.9%. This includes SANRAL, this includes revenue services, this includes the National Student Financial Aid Scheme for student loans and bursaries, and it also includes the South African Social Security Agency. So that's just an example of what kind of or which transfers you make to departmental agencies. SANRAL will be in roads, SARS will be in the treasury account, and then NSFAS in higher education and social development. We've also transferred about 27.7 billion to public corporations and private enterprises, and mainly to PRASA for the rolling stock fleet, and also to higher education institutions. And this is your university subsidy grant that you make to university. So again, we are on track there. Now, in terms of broadly the kind of things that we pick up is that for quarter three, a total increase in voters' expenditure is 51.7 billion or 11% compared to 11.2% compared to quarter three of 2014-15. Quarter three expending increased by almost 13 billion, 9.4%, and bulk of this is in compensation of employees and expenditure of goods and services 1.8. Funds transferred increased by about 7.5 or 7 to 3.9 billion. Now, I thought, Chair, let me go into individual clusters of spending, and I know then we can spend more time with the committee in terms of what trends we see. In the urban development infrastructure program, there's an increase of transfers due to human settlements to municipalities, as I said, of almost 20.9 billion. And this represents an increase of about 689 million compared to the same period last year. So there is progress, or there is real nominal increases. I'm confusing the two, real and nominal. No, nominal increases of about 670 million that went from last year to this year. So there is some real increase that we see here, which simply means houses are being built. The challenge is to quantify in terms of numbers to see if these houses are being delivered. And then this also is indicated by the funds in the transfers of conditional grants that we see. Capital expenditure in water and sanitation, 49.2% of funds allocated has been spent, which is a 102% increase compared to last year due to delivery problems experienced in the previous financial year. Now, there is an increase quarter on quarter of about 102%, but then it is that only 49.2% has been spent after 9 months. And I said, remember, the benchmark is 75. So we, as I indicated right at the beginning, that in this program, we are not comfortable that water and sanitation is up to scratch, and the challenge is, we know the challenge about water provision, the drought, and building of dams and flows. So again, it's a red flag that we are putting through to the committee, like we did in quarter two discussion. The over expenditure on the road program is via the transport board due to transaction fees that is being collected by RTMC, which are not paid to DOC to cover the expenses of the E-Net system. Now, this is an ongoing conversation. We met with my team. I met with the Road Service Management Corporation. The understanding that as soon as they collect money and transfer it to DOT is not happening for various reasons that are mainly historical. So you will notice that it looks like over expenditure, but actually it's not. Once the books are balanced, it will balance out. So, but these are ongoing discussions, that it's important that whatever money that's being collected should be paid over to the Department of Transport. But however, if you speak to RTMC, like I spoke to them, the challenge is their funding, who's funding their operations, who's funding the national rollout of the national traffic system or national traffic management that we see. I normally say to them, is your blue and white blue and white GTIs that we see running around the whole country. So spending of that new program is not catered for, and as a result, the only way to cater for it is through these fees that are being collected. But it's an ongoing discussion, and we should find closure so that there's understanding and the delivery of that particular service or function to road users can be maximized. Telecommunications postal services have only spent 5.5% of the 353 million allocated towards broadband due to delays in decisions regarding procurement. Now, this is another red flag that's important that we bring to the attention of the committee, that broadband rollout is very slow and the department is not coming to the party in a way that we expected them to. And mainly is the procuring of the service provider. Now, the issue is a bit legalistic in nature, as we understand it. The president made a pronouncement during last year's State of the Nation and indicated that Telkom has been identified as the agency to provide broadband rollout. Now, to do that, it means then the department must be, what's the right PSM term? Treasury must give approval. What is it? Condonement from the Treasury. Now, where we sit, we still think that it is important for a proper procurement process to be undertaken. Because we think it will be challenged, and we know it's going to be challenged by various role players in the sector. So there's been a contestation that's ongoing, which is very healthy, between the lawyers, both from telecommunications department and ourselves. Legal opinions are to and fro in terms of which way is the right way to go. In the meantime, from an appropriations point of view, money has been appropriated and it's not spent. And we think the procurement issues must be addressed. And you will see next month or next time when we come back to you with the report that I think I must bring to the attention of the committee, you will see that this department features prominently, because at the last week of the month of March, that's when money is taken away from this program to other programs, which is a bit problematic where we are. And because it's not the first time that there's been understanding in this program. So the issues are mainly regarding the procurement processes that must still unfold and be within the prescripts of the law. Slow spending in this sector towards disaster relief due to slow verification of costs and delay in requesting disbursements. Now, this is an indictment on us as a government, and I think we should take full responsibility when we know drought and the impact, when we should know that disaster has struck, especially farmers. Now, verifying costs is a very difficult exercise in order to make sure that the disaster relief due is money is being disbursed towards it. So again,
the Department of Cooperative and COCTASH should actually come to the party here, because the Disaster Management Center sits within the COCTA department. Energy also shows slow spending in the solar heater geyser program due to shift towards a new delivery approach. Now again, I'm bringing this to those last four bullets, in fact all of them basically in this sector. It's important that these departments are actually being asked to come and account for how at least they approach the spending in those particular departments. The last bullet, there is a clear example, Chair, where halfway in your delivery program you decide to adopt a new approach. From a budget and from a funding point of view, it doesn't make sense, because definitely you will slow, there will be slow. When I say a different approach, that this money was lying in ESCOM. 1.2 billion was not spent. I wrote a letter to the CEO of ESCOM about eight months ago, and say, look, because you are not spending, that money is lying down, please pay it back into the revenue fund in order for us to relook at different, because ESCOM was not spending this money, or the energy sector, because the Department of Energy also involved. So there's a new delivery approach, and this is causing endless problems in actually getting the solar heater geyser program to kick-start in a way that I think Parliament has intended when these monies were voted in for this program. So, Chair, that's insofar as this urban development infrastructure programs are concerned. So, as I said, we are raising those red flags to bring to the committee's attention, and at the appropriate time, we'll obviously engage further. Under defense, public order, and safety, defense spent about 32 billion at the end of quarter three against scheduled drawings of 31.4. Now, again, you know, we can call it overspending, but we're not very worried because it's within the quarter. This is mainly due to increased pay and compensation of employees, which is understandable because of the adjustments that have to be made when salary increments were implemented. And this could obviously not be done on time in ascension to the adjustment appropriation bill. So that's an area that, you know, we just wanted to bring to the attention of the committee. South African Police Services, the main area of slow spending compensation of employees, which is due to vacancies. Again, it is an issue of plan versus implementation. And again, the Department of Police Services can obviously account when you know that you've got vacancies and you've got a need for police officers to be on the street. So it's an important area that I think the committee can note in terms of making sure that the department addresses a number of personnel. As at the end of the third quarter, the department had 9,413 vacant posts, mainly under the visible policing and detective programs. These are core to the programs in this department. And the vacancies are the result of natural attrition, and the department is in the process of filling this post. Now, all that we can pick up when we engage with them is that they are in the process of filling this post. Now, as to enforcing and ensuring that they do, it's mainly the accounting officer there, which I think should account if there are so many vacancies. Because remember, when there are vacancies, and let me bring the committee closely to the 16-17 budget. In the budget documentation, or the budget that we passed in February, you will notice that we took money from programs, including compensation budgets, which were lying, which posts were not filled. We had to take money, to draw money back from programs that were not performing, including taking money for vacant positions. So if where we sit there's an opportunity like this, we will obviously take the money and use it for other burning programs. Departments on an ongoing, on a yearly basis are not spending, and that's the trend in this, including correctional services and the police. Justice and constitutional development, exclusive of direct charges, the department underspent by about 380 million or 2.5% below the approved projections. Again, it's an issue about projections, drawings versus expenditure. The major contributors to the lower than spending, planned spending, are the, again, the delays in the vacant posts, the filling vacant posts, an outstanding merit award for notching adjustments and outstanding payments, for merit awards, as well as delays in the implementation of the criminal justice system on modernization project due to the delays in the procurement process. Now, you'll pick up that in many departments, procurement processes will become an issue. Spending versus procurement, spending versus your procurement plan. What the office of the OCPO did, the Office of the Chief Procurement Officer, is to ensure and insist that there is a, what they call a procurement plan of the department. In all the programs and projects where procurement is critical, they've requested departments to prepare procurement plans. And as they modernize the systems in the Chief Procurement Office, we'll have to align procurement plans with spending. Because if you are not spending as per your procurement plan, means you are going to have a lag and delay, and funding in future will either be dictated to by your procurement plan, and then release of money and voted money obviously will have to be dictated by the procurement plan. So the challenge here is that in this justice and constitutional development cluster is two things: vacant posts and procurement issues, including any other related costs around the compensation of employees. I put main area of spend again, compensation of employees, and this is due to vacancies. What we have been engaging the department on, I think if I resign, I've got a month that I indicate. Nothing, and we are telling accounting officers this, nothing stops you from advertising the position on the month that you received a notification that the person is leaving. If it's natural attrition, is understood. But if it's because of vacancies that arise because of movements of staff, then we find that unacceptable because you can plan it. You can plan it. If one department is doing it, then we think all other departments are doing it. Because some departments are doing it pretty well. As soon as you submit the resignation letter, the HR process of filling that post are kickstart, and then you can. But again, it's how we interpret, how chief financial officers interpret. Because some argue that, sure, if you, once a person indicated that they're leaving and he starts advertising and spending money in the newspapers, that will be regarded as irregular kind of spending, which I think it shouldn't, and it's not. In terms of IPIT, as at the end of the third quarter, the directorate had 51 vacant posts, 33 of which were under investigation and information management, which is also core service delivery program. Now, again, cases of police officers who are not acting according to a certain code, if 51 of you've got 51 vacant posts, you are not obviously going to be addressing properly all your service delivery programs that relate only to your function. So this is a challenge that we had a discussion with the IPIT, and we hope they will make sure that this is addressed. This is also due to delays in the security vetting process by the State Security Agency and the temporary freezing of all funded posts in the directorate to accommodate the implementation of salary adjustment. Now, as I said in the previous committee interactions with you, that the 2015 wage agreement was a difficult agreement or challenging thing, especially for departments, especially smaller departments like, or divisions like IPIT, because it means there's not room, enough scope to actually look through your baseline allocations to actually make sure that you address all the salary adjustments, because we did not factor in. The agreement was more expensive than the money we had at the time. So what we told departments, even though we were able to make allocations to address the gap, you have to find money from resources within baseline. So smaller departments would obviously suffer because they would not, because of the problematic, to look for a better way, problematic wage agreement that we had to enter into, which was very costly, as I said in the last meeting, where out of a possible budget of 30.7 billion, we ended up spending 67 billion in addressing this wage settlement that we reached with labor. The department is currently establishing its own vetting in order to address the vetting challenges experienced within SSA. Now, that's an issue, and it's an issue that I think the relevant committee should address with the State Security Agency, most departments, including the Treasury, where vetting is outstanding, especially for senior people, because there are various levels, and again, the backlogs are something to worry about. Again, in the Defense and Public Order Safety Cluster, the Office of the Chief Justice is also underspending, mainly due to delays in the filling of posts and outstanding invoices for government motor vehicles. Now, as I said, honorable members, you know, delays in the vacant posts is an issue. Vacancies are costing us because we have locked in money there that you cannot spend in other programs, and as a result, you've got resources lying idle, and yet the need is there. We request that the committee should note that despite numerous requests to the civilian secretariat for the police to implement stringent cost containment measures to ensure that spending is kept within available budget, it is highly likely that the department will overspend its budget of 2015-16. As at the end of the third quarter 15-16, the department spends about 77% of adjusted appropriation budget of 118 million. Now, we're just noting this, but we're not saying it is okay for the department to overspend. What we are engaged on with is to continuously ensure, implement cost containment measures to ensure, because if you overspend on your budget, our approach and what we've been telling departments is you are breaking the law. The Appropriation Act says you can only spend so much, and if you exceed that, you are breaking the law. So we hope that we will continue engaging the civilian secretary for the police to ensure that they remain within budget. And so we just wanted to leave that up, that it's most likely that they will overspend, but it's something that we want to ensure that doesn't happen at the end of the financial year. Administration services, now this will relate to departments like Treasury, Presidency, COCTA, DPSA. Okay, the jobs fund, still an issue within the Treasury. Slow spending experience due to project delays, extension of implementation periods, less than favorable economic conditions, and transfer reduced by almost 350 million. Now, I stand to be corrected that the jobs fund did appear before the committee, because that was a request from the committee the last time. When I say we, it will be Treasury as public finance, the division that's responsible to ensure that government departments as a whole, because we remove ourselves from the Treasury when we engage. We have highlighted to the DG of the Treasury that we are concerned of the jobs fund and the slow spending thereof, because it's again a good candidate, and we saw it in the 16-17 budget when resources were taken away from the jobs fund to actually help or assist fund other programs. So the pattern continues of slow spending there. The National New Development Bank, $2 billion funded through special appropriation, was only paid in the fourth quarter. So again, as we know, this was as per the statute of establishing the New Development Bank. This is something that came long in the adjustment process, and a special appropriation was supposed to be made. So you'll see the spending coming through in the fourth quarter. Again, in communications, slow spending due to vacancies and transfer payments that are due in the fourth quarter. Again, in GPSA, again, spending mainly due to vacancies and delayed purchase of furniture. In DECO, there's slow spending due to delays in foreign construction process, and transfer payments are only due in the fourth quarter. So you'll see that in the third quarter shows some slow spending, but mainly some of those costs will be reflected in quarter four. So we hope the quarter four spending will be on track. Education and related departments, basic education in particular, looking at the school infrastructure backlog grants, the department's spending is slow due to the delays in submission of invoices by the implementing agents. If this is not addressed, it could lead to underspending of this project by end of financial year. Now, again, as much as we, you know, this is information that we can only gather from the department around delays in the implementing agents submitting invoices late. it will be interesting to engage further with the department to check, especially when you talk about provinces generally and all of them, to find out if there are any other reasons other than what is being provided here by the department around why the slow spending. There is persistent slow spending in the mass science and technology grant in 5 of the 9 provinces since the inception of the grant. And we're saying there that the department has put measures in place to address the slow spending to ensure that this grant objectives are met, because there's clear need in improving the capabilities of these teachers in these three as important areas. In the higher education space, university education spending, slow spending there due to delays in the payment for infrastructure earmark grants, as these funds are released based on submission of higher education institutions, and that needs to be analyzed against the criteria that's there, that's assessing the disbursement of funds. Now, also, the two universities and the spending thereof, because in the new universities, is it South Lucky and Mpumalanga? Now, those, you know, spending, infrastructure spending will, you know, for this higher education includes allocations for those capital spending, those two universities. And again, we are comfortable. We did meet with the two universities, including the Department of Higher Education in the last quarter, to try and understand the challenges, try and understand if we can move money around if need be, still within baseline, to ensure that the delivery of these institutions is on target and that those students are not disadvantaged. Because if you look at the two provinces in particular and the location of these two universities, student housing is an issue, and we think the infrastructure grants should be addressed as soon as possible as these universities are expanding. So as I said to the committee right at the beginning, some of the details is obviously not easy in a short space to meet 40 departments, but when time permits, we make sure that we engage them all the time. Health and social development, there's generally low spending, and Mark is here, he's obviously very close, and he's actually, we actually tease him and say he's employed by the Department of Health, you know. Maybe because he's a medical doctor, actually we must make sure that we take this doctorate away now and give you an economics degree. But you can engage in terms of what the details are. But if it's 60.9% despite the budget reduction in the AENE, then it's a problem. It's a big problem, because if you add the 300 million, then that 60 is much less from allocated amount. Major capacity constraints and too many diverse project types makes it difficult to manage this grant. And again, we can engage with the honorable members in terms of questions that may arise in this area. National health insurance, delays in the CCM, again, Mark, what is CCMDD?
Chronic medicine.
Yes, chronic medicine dispensary program. The rollout thereof is due to challenges with a pickup point and storage facilities. And this is one area that we thought, as part of NHI rollout, And we don't have to wait for 15 years to have full implementation of NHI rollout. We have to ensure that as we move along with this grant giving us direction, that we are able to sort out the storage, to sort out the procurement and the disbursement of medicines in a way that we can ensure that or have an idea how a properly rolled out NHI will look like when it's fully implemented. The HPV virus spending will improve. A second dose will only be administered in quarter four. Now, with this grant is timed. It's for 9-year-old girls in primary school, and you can only, and Mike will explain the details later, you can only administer it at certain intervals and at certain set dates in the financial year. So that's how we think spending will obviously. And in the past, by the way, historically, this grant has been performing pretty well, and the 53% doesn't worry us at all, because once this grant is administered in quarter four, then the full amount will be spent. In the health and social development sector, the inability of local suppliers to produce required condom volumes is an issue. and this is worsened by the new condom specification. So in this program, there is obviously low spending, and then we can give details, and all of this is because local suppliers cannot meet demand, and the new spec also was a challenge. Again, the table there just shows spending, and we can go into detail. If you look at non-profit institutions, the department only spent 40-53% of allocated budget, and this is mainly due to transfers of the HIV and AIDS organization. New non-profits are still being appointed for the implementation of the HIV and AIDS awareness and prevention program. Now, despite what you see as low spending in this program, this is one of the only programs of government where in the 16-17 budget we are able to allocate more money. There's money that went to TB investment case and HIV and case and AIDS cases. So we have put more money because we believe once all of these basics are in place, the budgets will be spent, and that 53%, once all the appointments of NPOs are done, then spending will obviously increase at levels that are unimaginable. The department, in regards to provinces and municipalities, department spent 5.8% of allocated budget due to delays in the substance abuse center's conditional grant. Now, that is unacceptable. And whichever language you can use, whichever defense or reasons that you can advance, out of a budget of 47 million, only spending 2.8 million, again, it talks to issues about planning and ensuring that, and as we all know, substance abuse in our townships, in our urban areas, has increased in the last few years. And when money like this is lying unspent, it's a cause for worry. Again, you know, the details can be given later. Economic services. Now, if we turn on to departments of government, public enterprises, again, slow spending there is due to reduced payment of the second tranche of ESCOM transfer relating to the ESCOM special appropriations. And as you know, this is money from the Vodacom sale, 22 billion or so. So once the full transfer is made, you obviously will see spending, because we have to make sure that this appropriation comes from the Department of Public Enterprises in order for us to account for it properly in the books of government. Slow spending has also been mainly in program 3 due to lower spending on compensation, which lies in delays in projects. And that is shortage of skilled personnel to oversee some of the big projects that we see. Department of Economic Development, slow spending mainly due to, again, filling of posts and slow programs of some planned activities, such as the PICC communication and publicity campaign with GIS projects. Now, the filling of vacant positions is a problem, as you can see now, across all government departments. We jointly with the Department of Public Service and Administration have to find a way to address this. Because from a budget point of view, from a budget planning point of view, if money is lying unspent for a few years, the budget office will be the first division of the Treasury to gobble the money away and fund new programs or other programs. So again, in the next quarter, we'll be able to show what impact the non-filling of vacant positions meant for the whole budget when the preliminary numbers are available. So small business development, again, due to slow filling of posts and slow spending on transfers and subsidies due to delays in the commencement of application adjudication process for incentives, example being the cooperative incentive scheme and the Black Business Supply Development Program. However, spending has improved for these incentives in the last few months. So, now, again, this is bad planning, Chair, and bad budgeting. When we are quick, and that's something that we have learned over time now, and this budget has been in a constrained fiscal environment, that's when we see that by just throwing in money when plans are not available is a problem. So we knew, and it made sense, and it was appealing, during the 2015 budget process that ultimately led to the 15-16 budget, when this newly established department was putting a proposal on the plate, and we bought into this MTEC, the Medium Tech Expenditure Committee, including the Treasury Committee, including Cabinet, finally making a recommendation to Parliament to pass these allocations to this department, that it made sense. The language was correct, is what we wanted to hear about the cooperative incentive scheme, the Black Business Supplier Program, all of this made sense. But if the spending, it means we did not plan for it properly in terms of rolling it out. Because nothing was wrong in saying, instead of giving 100 million the first year, as you are building, let's give you 15 million to plan and commit to boosting the money as the plan develops. But what we have done, and which is a problem for us, and when I say us, it's the whole of government here, is that we are quick to make allocations and then which results in underspending, especially in your big program. In the DTI program or DTI department, slow spending mainly due to transfer payments, compensation of employees and goods and services. Slow spending transfer payments was mainly in the incentive development program, APDC, SEZ and CIP incentives. Now, this incentive program is what we have said in the 16-17 budget. We want to go deeper into what we're spending money on in this industry incentive. Because reality, and not only DTI-related incentives, including all incentives. You remember there was something called employer tax incentive that we introduced, the Treasury introduced a few years ago. The job fund is one, including all of these in DTI. We want to focus on an expenditure review, in particular for incentives, without upsetting the industry or without making the industry feel at ease. A few days ago, we met BMW. BMW came to the Treasury, we engaged with them. The senior BMW executives in Germany came, and they were worried about what we said in the budget, that we will be reviewing incentives. They thought we are saying we want to stop the incentives. But that's not the whole idea, if you look at the automotive industry, because we know the amount of jobs it's creating and so on and so on. And the new investment that they want to make in BMW, with starting to manufacture or to build the X3 in Rosslyn, it's new. So once they put billions and billions of rand, they were worried about. But we are saying it's important that we review the impact of this. It's not only the APDP or the Motor Industry Development Program incentive, but it's all incentives. So for us to have an idea as to what are we spending money on and whether the intended jobs are being created or not through the incentives that we are putting in place. The major reasons were as a result of our saying administrative issues such as the expiration of contracts, which we have to do, consulting engineers, outstanding quarterly reports from province on claim files, the amendment of existing funding agreements and delays in inspections. So as a result, you cannot just pay without knowing. So we are able to buy into this because it helps us to know that the department is on top of, they just don't disperse money when they are not sure if funding agreements and deliveries or deliverables can be experienced or not. Furthermore, slow spending in this program was largely due to the integration of into the DTI, formerly the National Research Fund. Now, maybe I must say this, you know, in a different forum. And this is an engagement that we engage with DTI. DTI has become, I think, too big, Chair, to a point where, and I must be very careful in what I say because I don't want to upset my colleagues in DTI, but we have to have a relook in terms of programs in the DTI setup. We have to be serious about what funds do we take away from DTI to fund small business development. Because in the absence of resources, we have to relook at what we have in the system to be able to make sure that we fund other programs. There are programs in DTI which should actually be housed in small business development. There are programs in DTI that should be in the economic development space. So giving ourselves time to look at DTI and what it does will do us a great favor. And that's why I say I must be careful in terms of what I say around some of the GTI programs. But it's an ongoing engagement with my colleagues, and I think it's important that we focus on this. So, Chair, the message from this slide, there's two things that I want to bring to the attention of the committee. That we have a challenge across the whole of government. Vacancies are not filled on time by departments. Secondly, the very first slide in this, when I started, is important, that these five sectors, water and sanitation, RTMC in terms of telecommunications, postal service on broadband, and finally energy around the solar energy program are of concern to us, and that we would recommend to the committee, and we can be in the room when engagements with water departments and transport and energy and telecommunications postal services are being addressed, including the treasury once more. If the committee, and unfortunately we don't have next year, I mean quarter four numbers, it'll be interesting to see whether the job fund has progressed from what we think is slow spending today. So let me stop there. We'll be more than happy to take questions per sector or whichever way Chair would recommend that we approach it. Thank you very much.
All right. Yeah, that sounds like some good music to end this presentation. Mm-hmm. I also want to welcome officials that we were informed you were held up at the visitor center, but we're glad you're here now. Before I allow members to ask questions, I just want to ask if the rest of the team would like to add anything, clarify anything, or you would be comfortable with engaging in the deliberation. Is that in order? Okay. Honorable members, there you have it. Let's go. Honorable Kaliwa Matlaopa, the first. Honorable Sheikh Imam, next. Honorable Natasha Lowe is next. Honorable Sinokwanyane. Sinokwanyane, yes, you're next. Honorable Malcolm Fick is the next. Honorable Sibongile Manana the next. And Honorable Sheila Shoppestole will come last. And then we will take the next round. Yes, Honorable Matoko.
Thanks, Honorable Chair. Thanks to the treasury, the presenter, especially. I think the way you have presented it, it's clear, you know, the challenges and the achievements that the government is having, especially around the issue of the expenditure, because it has been a challenge that the departments were failing to spend quarterly, and now I think we appreciate the spending trend that has increased in departments. But I want to check whether is the expenditure for departments in line with their predetermined objectives, because spending alone can just be spent, but the impact is the key that we need to witness, especially as public representatives, to say that expenditure in line with the predetermined objectives of the departments, or are predetermined objectives also aligned to the medium-term strategic framework and the NDP priorities? Because just spending and we are not aligning to us is not something that we will appreciate if those predetermined objectives doesn't talk to the priorities of the NDP, as well as the medium-term strategic framework, because now they have improved drastically, but we want to know whether it does make an impact, especially to the plan of the country, Plan 2030, which is an NDP. like the presenter, we are also having a concern on the non-expenditure, especially defense, let me just say, defense, public order and safety, together with the urban development infrastructure. I think the issue of energy, I want to get the clarity to say, what do we mean if we are saying they fail to spend, or they have slow spending because of the shift towards a new delivery approach? What is it, a shift? Because the issue of energy and the water and the solar water geysers is what the government has, like, we have promised the nation out there that this particular project is going to be rolled out. And now if we are saying it's a new approach, maybe if we can get an understanding, because it's really our concern is under expenditures. And the worst part of it is the defense, public order and safety. You know, if you fail to spend on your core service delivery program, because it's like it's a core mandate that we have to do, it's a challenge. You know, in the country we are faced by, the crime and so on and so forth. And if you look at where they have failed to spend, they have failed to spend on the key implementation of the criminal justice system. They failed to spend. But I know that it's not something that it's your responsibility. You have to engage the department. But it's our concern. You are raising the concern like you, that you say if they fail to spend on the core mandate, it becomes a problem that they have failed to spend on there. I think what one would suggest, we have to invite those departments to come forward so that we can engage with them. Because as the presenter was correctly indicating, you know, we have the medium-term expenditure framework to say that you must plan and spend within 3 years now. So there is no need to rush to say you need a budget for implementation when you have not started even planning, you know. Because the first year, if you see that you can't spend, you can request the money for planning. You know that in the second year, it's an implementation. So you can't falter rather than taking funds and locking it in somewhere that it can't be used. And we are paying, we are having a debt as a country. These monies are borrowed just not to be spent. It's really a concern of us. I think they need to be called and come forward so that we can be in a position to deliberate on those matters. And also there is an issue of the lack of capacity to deliver. At the same time, there are vacant posts. You know, if you see the post, they said subs 9,430. You know, the country is facing triple challenges. One of the challenges is the issue of unemployment. If we as a government, we are saying we are having these triple challenges, but in our disposal, we are supposed to employ, and we are not doing that. What is that? But I think the department will respond, maybe, because they are responsible, not treasurer. Treasurer is just alerting us on something, but it's our concern as public representatives to say that these people are being given a chance to employ people, they are not employing the people. And also the issue that was raised by the presenter correctly, the issue of water and sanitation. You know, really, the country is burning because of the issue of drought, you know. You see, even when you open radio, people going with the bucket, going to the stream trying to get water. But if the department concerned can't really focus on what matters most, the core mandate, that's because this is our concern, If the department is not implementing the core mandate, what is it? And also the understanding to say that what are the consequences for the failure to do that? It's not enough to say the reason is this, the reason is this. Because when you make, when you come up with an implementation plan, you come up because you have done a research to say this can be done at that time. And really, it's our concern. But we want to thank Treasury for coming up with this important presentation to us. You know, I was looking at health and social development, 5.8. You know, they're failing to the delay. And what I don't understand, what can prevent a department to do a transfer? Does it need a lot of planning to do a transfer? Because if you fail to spend just to transfer money, you see, if my brother gives me this water and I must transfer to this one or pass it to this one, what are the challenges in just passing the money to the relevant departments or institutions that are supposed to do the implementation? It's the question that really, you know, the expenditure of this health and social development really also, all these departments that have been highlighted here, we need to ask them to come forward and really engage them, because really it is not good. Yeah, because also on the issue of the incentives, one was, you will ask, I think, better in the department to say, what is, are we getting value for money on those incentives? Is it achieving the priorities of government, or we just give the industries the money or big corporates the money, but no return to us as government to make a difference on the ground around the issue of service delivery? No, thanks, Chen.
Yeah, next is Honorable.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Treasury, for some very valuable information that you have provided for us. Let me start off by asking, what do you believe is the improvement with regards to the 30-day payment? Has there been improvement with regards to the measures that you have been putting in place and all the shouting and screaming that we have been doing for a period of time? And so if you can tell us whether there has been something. I'm happy to hear that the borrowing and the spending pattern is now aligning itself, which is actually a good thing. What do you find is the problem of underspending or late spending? Because now you're going to find where they were underspending, and you've got the fourth quarter coming up. Suddenly a whole lot of work gets done in the fourth quarter, which I call fiscal dumping anyway. There's a danger there. But I also want to align that with, is it not the case that what happens is because you want to spend, there's a lot of emphasis on spending, and like my colleague is saying, it should not only be on spending, it's the outcome that is important, not to just go and put 100% spending on anything and everything and saying I've spent my 100%, but you haven't delivered in terms of your strategic plan, and I think that for me is a serious concern. But we have found that come the fourth term, everybody starts performing. Now, why I'm asking specifically about this, is it not that we're not planning initially properly and ready for the first quarter and things, so when we get these allocations, we're not ready to spend them timeously? And remember, this should be an ongoing process from the previous year where you should actually be planning. Has Treasury, with these, especially those that are underspending, have you now put something in place in terms of some engagement with these departments or some intervention to be able to try and address these challenges, and also make sure that you follow this, like my colleague always says, follow the money, for you to follow these specific people, which I call repeat offenders, you know, to ensure that this does not happen again and again and again. You know, I have a serious challenge when it comes to things like the problem we're facing in the country with condoms. We have such a high unemployment rate. We have trade and industry. We know we've allocated money. President spoken about creating jobs. Minister of Finance spoke about the same thing. And year again, I hear the emphasis we have to import. Now, why are we not able to get the relevant departments to sit together, create the industry, create the jobs, and produce our own locally made condoms so we can solve the problem? You know, I cannot, but this seems to happen. And when you speak to the relevant departments, no, we've identified 20, 30 different industries, but all I hear is, yes, we have identified. But if you look at it on the ground, I don't see it happening. But there's information saying we have to import. And such a high, and we have very skilled people in this country, very, very skilled. We manufactured our own motor vehicles. We've done everything. So that is also. Now, the other thing is this, you know, I find in a whole lot of these departments we talk about compensation to employees, and there's vacancies throughout. Now, the minister has also said we're going to relax this issue of compensating employees to cut down on the cost. Now, I don't know whether that the plans need to be amended accordingly, because we're saying compensation, we have budgeted for these things. We're now saying that we may not necessarily fill these positions because we want to cut down on cost. Is that not creating, it is not a conflict? On the one hand, we want to cut down, on the other hand, we're saying there are vacancies and we're not spending. So maybe we need to realign those things in line with the fact that there has to be a reduction on those costs. Now, at the same time, like my colleague also said, is there appears to be a capacity problem because people are not delivering, they're not performing. But there's a high vacancy rate. Now, I know that last week when the acting commissioner addressed us in terms of the police, he's got a lot of measures in place. They gave us a report on the number of that they've employed now in the last month or 2 months and how many more they're going to employ. So they've got some fantastic plans, and it sounds like to me that there's vast improvements in the police sector, to be honest with you. That's the impression I got, and I'm hoping that they're going to actually fulfill that. But again, you know, the problem is, I want to know about that alignment, okay, with regards to the compensation, that we want to reduce it, we have a capacity problem, and to deal with the actually plan, because otherwise it's always going to be you underspent, because your plan says you needed to employ so many, and there's vacancy. So I want to know. I have a little bit of a problem when I come in. I've looked into page 13 on Parliament, and I see right at the bottom they talk about constituency allowances, and it says April to December, no spend, but I know everybody is spending, and I know that it's being abused, I know there's a lot of things going on. Has Treasury ever, you know, we talk about oversight here, and I must tell you that I don't know what oversight there is, especially to things like constituency allowances. There is nobody even going to check this hundreds of thousands of constituency officers and staff we're supposed to have throughout the country. Nobody ever goes and checks them, to be honest with you. Now, for me, it is an abuse of the taxpayers' money. And whilst we are allocating this money, shouldn't there be some oversight to ensure that that money is spent correctly? And there clearly isn't now. I know Treasury is not going to give me a direct answer, because you're probably going to tell me it's not within your mandate. But because you deal with the finances, it's a concern. And I can tell you, we can see it. I can tell you, even on travel allowances is a challenge. You'll be shocked, or adulting you, I don't know if you won't be shocked, if I tell you that I know people are asking service stations to give them petrol slips just to claim, because they don't travel those journeys. That is exactly what they do. They've got petrol attendants in a different service station telling them, keep me slips. Now, these are the things that are happening. Now, you know, for me, I can't go and say you are corrupt and you are doing these things, when we as members of Parliament, starting right back at the top, we need to do something about these things, because these are taxpayers' money. So I want to know, what measures are we going to put in regards to Parliament having greater oversight role, you understand, and maybe giving it to this committee here, so we can go and make sure that something, we can go and do this oversight to make sure these constituency officers exist, furniture exists, all these things belong, it's taxpayers' money. We're allocating and allocating, and you can see, in terms of the previous report, very well spent, on par with the 75% for the third quarter. Brilliant. But where is it? There's nothing to show. So for me, that is really another problem. With regards to the, I think I've touched a little bit on that issue of the DTI, and yes, I'm not seeing what I want to see. I want to see it loud and clear in the country saying, listen, we have high unemployment rate, we have the people, we've got money allocated here, let's create the industry, come forward people, what is your expertise, what is the skill, what is the shortage in the country, let's create those industries and get it great, let's create those jobs. That is what we want to see, but I'm really not seeing it. With regards to the NHI, you know, repeatedly I've heard one of the main challenges we have is not being able to attract the GPs. And we don't have them locally, we must admit that. But we found a solution to it, but nothing is happening, and I don't understand why. You know, we also had a discussion on international relations at the static region, and we agreed. We would share our resources, we would share our skills within the region to uplift the static region. And we found hundreds of GPs available in Mauritius, which is part of the static region. And they're willing to come. They've now written to us repeatedly. But again, I don't know what is the real problem with regards to getting it off the ground so that we can see positive results in terms of, because energy is a brilliant thing. You know, I don't know if any of you read the media the other day of a very sad case of somebody that has come here. You understand? He's earning too much to get that. He can't actually get government assistance with regards to his kidneys. He's failed his dialysis. He cannot get it at the hospital. Plus, they've got the waiting list. And he does not earn enough for him to go and get the private. Now, look at how he is caught in between. The only thing that will happen in his case is going to have to die. There's nothing else. And really, you know, I'm saying, and yet we have, and we're going in the right direction. I believe we should be giving the total support to a thing like the NHI, because it's a brilliant thing. There may be weaknesses. The idea is brilliant. And I think together, if we put our heads together and support the minister, I think we can go forward in that. So I'm really not sure why there is not why that is not being accelerated so that we can get the chair. I'm going to stop there for now.
Yes, Honorable Law.
Thank you, Chair. You know, Chair, when we started this meeting, that's precisely what I said, and my concern of getting this presentation late. I know the gentlemen have apologized and so forth, but we are sitting here with a presentation that has so much information that needs cross-checking and cross-reference. Because we are talking about a presentation that are talking to billions of money. And all of us come from certain constituencies. We have to go and report back to those constituencies. And when you go on the ground and you see how much money here are underspent and things are not going according, you're sitting with that concern. And now you are coming here, you must elaborate on a report. But nevertheless, we will do that. But it must never happen again. Should it happen again, this meeting shouldn't take place, and then the National Treasury should take full responsibility for the expenditure of that meeting, should we get information this late again. Then I have a suggestion as well, Chair, or proposal. When we're having a report of this nature, because we're going to deliberate on issues and we're going to ask National Treasury questions, but they won't necessarily can answer us because they mean they don't stretch as that far to the questions that we may ask. Can't we, when we're having a report of this nature again, and we must look at also at the rules of Parliament and so forth, to bring in, have this for a whole week and bring in each department to also that they can answer to us, because departments anyway have to come to us. Can't we have something of that nature? Because for me, we're going to ask them now questions and they will say no, they can't necessarily answer us. Or you now we must wait for 3 or 4 weeks to get a certain department to ask them why have you underspent, why have you overspent, and then the problem just progress. So then, because at this stage, I don't think that we are doing any impact or we are progressing as a committee as a way that we should in on our oversight role on these departments that are overspending or underspending. And the problem just continues. It's sort of a trend. So I think that is my proposal going forward, Chair. Then on page 12, on the transfers, I just have a question of clarity there. There's an increase primarily under the Passenger Rail Agency on rolling stock fleet renewal program and other capital programs. Can I please have the amounts? Because for us, it's amounts that matters. We want to cross check, because we know on Prasa there was an issue with stock that was coming into the country which were not budgeted, but something of that nature, and then inflation and all of those things. So can I just have the proper figure there for that one on page 12? And then again on the one of Department of Energy, again you're going to ask the question but they won't necessarily be able to answer us. We need to get the Department of Energy in chair and discuss this on the slow spending, and then what is happening, because are we sitting with a case with a government that can't plan, that can't properly plan? What is the issue here that departments don't spend money that is at their disposal, that they should spend? So we are sitting with a larger problem here of possibly a government that don't know how to plan and just get overnight, they do fly-by-night programs and they don't know how to spend the money. And that is totally wrong. Because people on the ground are needing services. I was for the first time in Pedi last week. It was such a, it's an inhuman way to live as an individual, and you still see in departments not performing their mandates on the money that are spent, are given to them to spend, and people still don't have running water. People still don't have electricity. And you are asking yourself, but what is the department doing? And then I think on the other one, Chair, if I can also get a list of departments that are guilty of fiscal dumping as well. Who is those departments that are guilty on the last minute? Because it's also indicated that their departments don't know how to spend. All of these departments that are guilty thereof, Chair. And yet again, on the other one, on page 20, the inability of local suppliers to produce required condom volumes. Did the health department do a risk assessment before putting out that they will color condoms of the flavored condoms, to see that local markets can be able to produce those condoms? Because now we are sitting with a situation whereby certain people, when they go to a clinic, they won't get a condom and they will have unprotected sex because we wanted fancier things. So we need to, was the market research done in that program? In fact, we need to check in all of these programs that the government are putting in, and it was noted here, are market research done in this field for these programs? It's not something that somebody was thinking of, oh, that program can be nice, let's do it. So I think let's look also into that. And I think that is, yeah, and then also on page 20 again, on education and related departments, math and science and technology grants in 5 of the 9 provinces, low spending. If I can get a list of those 5 provinces, it will also be interesting to see if we check the 5 provinces, if we can sort of check how did they also relate in the matric results coming, you know, so we want to do those comparisons as to why that 5 provinces have low, no spending on those programs. That is currently a key programs of government. I think that is as far as I can bite chair for now, since we have received the documentation so late. Thank you very much.
Honourable Profit.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. Thank you to Treasury for the tool now that we can use to engage the departments, because that's the purpose of this information. And I would like to share through you, well, to you, not through you, that we really do it. You know, I mentioned it previously that we get a lot of information, and I would rather take just this, or, you know, something, instead of having regular meetings and meetings with everybody, they take this and use it to go to the departments and explain, because our people are suffering out there. There's money that's been allocated, and it's not renewed. I mean, if you look at education, health, you know, people are going to hospitals, for example, not to go and get healthy or well anymore. They're going to hospitals to die. That's what's happening. It's because of the state of our hospitals, of our education, well, hospitals in the case of, and then our education system. I mean, it's just ridiculous what is being given to the people for the money that is available in human settlement houses, and we get poor excuses that, well, we get that the fact that the money is not being spent. It cannot be allowed. And then, you know, the sad part about it is that those same people will go on pension in those departments because nothing happens to them. And therefore, Honourable Chair, I'm appealing to that we need to really do something about it. So, as I said, now just a few questions and comments, if you allow me. And I know it's information, and I'm not questioning Treasury, because obviously we've got this information that you brought to us. So it will just be for clarity and some issues that I would like to raise here. We talk about a spending growth of 10%. Now, how does that compare to the revenue growth? Because I'm asking that question because if it's not sort of, okay, I understand we do have requirements, the country does have requirements, but if it's sort of much slower, your revenue growth, then the debt gap is going to be widening at a figure that we cannot afford. So I just would like if you could comment on that. The issue that you concerned about with regards to the environment as well, you see, if I'm allowed to do something, then I'm going to do it every year. And now the environment is the same situation, because departments know where they will go to Treasury, and I understand you did say you fight with them, etc. So I'm not implying that you just give them or approve them. But the thing is, they know after the fight, we're going to get it anyway. So perhaps one needs to take a stance and say, but if requirements are not submitted by a certain date, and I know there's a law that governs it, but I'm just saying, maybe one should look at that. If the law doesn't prescribe that, then maybe we should look at some sort of legislation. The issue about the, and I'm not defending the municipalities and the provinces here, but you stated, I'm sorry for not getting your name at the beginning, but the transfers, you are track with the transfer, but we know now what the provinces and local government, the municipalities say, is that they have to wait. Some of the reasons they are given for waiting for their money is because Treasury says that they will get their money in the new financial year. Now my question is that because of the different financial years, does that create a problem? Because national government, the financial year ends in March, whereas the local government, their financial year ends in June. So does that lag, whichever way, create a problem? And then Chair, can I just refer to some of the slides? So, slide number 15. Here we have problems, and it was highlighted in the presentation about the urban development infrastructure and the spending of 49.2%, and we know what major problems we have. Service delivery protests, nearly, it's becoming nearly a daily occurrence. And so, with regards to all those issues, the under expenditure, and I don't want to go listing, you've explained it to us. But what I found interesting and concerning is the fact that they must now be paid back into the revenue fund. Now, that could be problematic because the parties that are responsible or that are defaulting are your officials, but the parties that are losing out that are going to be disadvantaged and are the beneficiaries of these, the solar water geysers, the disaster relief funds. So at the end of the day, your communities are suffering because of a few officials that are not doing their job. So we need to look at another way, because this comes up every year. Money gets sent back. Money must get sent back. But the people on the ground are the ones that are suffering. They have no access. We are the ones that are their representatives here and the government. So we need to look at ways of ensuring that that does not happen. I understand. I would probably do the same if I was in your boat, but we need to look at another way of solving the problem. Yeah, the issue about the vacancies, that just and I'm not going to agree with my colleague here saying that, yeah, on the one hand the minister says he wants to save money. That money is budgeted for. Mm-hmm. That is. So the vacancies that are budgeted for, again, somebody's failing, because that's why we have these capacity problems. So it's not the minister has put Minister Gordon has got these allocated money for certain fund, vacancies, and they must be filled. So people need to start paying. The overspending, that's on slide number 17. And it was mentioned by the presenter that it's unlawful. Sure. So if something is unlawful, then it must the person's parties must be dealt with. It's as simple as that. But it can't be unlawful, and we say, okay, I'm sorry that I overspent the money, and I really apologize to the country because it cannot be, we can't continue like that. If it's unlawful, then somebody must be taken to task. Just my view of that is. Yeah, I'm going to agree with my honorable friend Sheikh Imam. Yeah, this, he likes using the word, he likes calling it, this is slide number 18, this fiscal dumping thing. He probably is right, yeah. But what I found is that there's a lot of activity in the fourth quarter, and I understand there's been reasons given. But I'm sure in some cases that it's not because the programs and the payment is planned for the fourth quarter. I'm making a statement, and please tell me if I'm wrong here, but it is a concern that a lot of activity, financial activity, takes place in the fourth quarter. Person, slide number 19. I've got two. I don't think I agree with this statement made by the presenter regarding the first bullet point, basic education, school infrastructure. The department's spending is slow due to delays in submission of invoices. So surely, if it's only the invoice, it means the work has been done. So the money must have been spent. It hasn't been paid, but the money must have been spent. So I'm not so sure if I agree with you on that one, because the last sentence in that paragraph, you say, if it's not addressed, it could lead to underspending. But surely, if work is done, it must be paid. So, or maybe that's the way it's recorded. And then we will have a mismatch, obviously, because then you can have an underspending in the 1 year and an overspending in the next year. Is that how it works? Probably. And maybe because we make use of the cash basis. I believe we've got a medical doctor in house here. I plead to everybody in this one. This health, and I said it at the beginning, the state of our health. It's not that we can't afford it. We've got silly excuses here. This is abominable. You know, to come with excuses, we're not spending on 53.2%, 9.9%, 2.5%, 8%. I mean, it can't be. Get rid of the people, or make some sort of other come up with some sort of a plan. The condom issue has been mentioned. I don't know. I understand maybe there is some fun in it, but one must compare whether you want this colouring or flavouring, or whether you want to take the risk. So, as much as we have a capacity issue here, but surely, I mean, if you really want to do it, then and make sure that you are protected. So don't, I mean, whether it's the right colour or the right flavour, I think that I can't believe that's the only reason why people don't use the condoms that are supplied. So it's a serious issue. So, you know, people, we really need to look at that. I mean, 9.9%, shocking. The Minister of Health last year when he gave us a presentation, he was all excited about how this, you know, this HIV prevention and control is going to work. But it can't come from him only. It has to come from the other parties as well, in other words, the users. So we need to look at that. But overall, spending on health is just unacceptable. And we can't come here next year and then the same, we get, or the fourth quarter, and then we get the same information. So I'm just appealing on the chairperson. And then my last one, Honourable Chair, slide number 22 talks about this slow spending and expenditure due to the reduced payment in the second tranche of Eskom. Now, could we just get, because I saw this in the budget, it was mentioned, and I think, if I can remember, it was 5 billion that was not paid due to non-fulfillment of non-compliance or something. So could we just could you explain what that non-compliance is? Why wasn't that 5 billion paid? Because if they're not going to comply, then give it to somebody else that maybe needs the money, maybe in this case. All right. Thanks, Chair. Honourable Chair, this is all I have. Thanks.
Honourable Shoppers Toilet.
Thank you, Chairperson, for the opportunity. And thank you very much, Treasury. I just want to apologize for my previous thought that you should be chased away. I would have missed a lot. You know, now I have got so much weaponry on my side to deal with this naughty department. Thank you very much. Your input was very good for me. I am worried about one thing, that we are here dealing with issues in a constrained fiscal environment. And we have no options. We need to make assurance double sure that we make South African economy grow. And I think Treasury and this standing committee have got that responsibility. It's not a question of whether we want it or we feel like we need to do that. We need to make sure that this department called DTI is unpacked. We must focus on that department, and I will support you 100% when you say it's too big. It is too big. I don't think it is effective. We have got too many programs there that would work better if they were placed in the Department of Small Business or in Economic Development. That has always been my impression. But as it stands, DTI, it's very, very difficult for them to implement some of the programs. We need to make sure that when we give incentives to the public to the private sector, government must get benefit of that. We can't just give incentive and go on a summer holiday. We can't do that. We must follow up. Are we getting value for money? We fortunately, we are at the beginning of the year. It is the time when we must actually look at each and every a program in DTI it bringing to the growth of the economy? We cannot just say we'll depend on borrowing. What if we are put to junk status and we can't borrow, and we can't depend on that one? We need to grow the economy ourselves. That is what we must do ourselves and yourself. I am worried about this. You know, I was looking at this slide at the beginning that there's a lot of transfer from the national department to the province. And I'm not sure whether maybe there's capacity in the national sphere. I don't know. Even if it is poor, I think there is a measure of capacity in the national sphere. But when monies are transferred to the provinces, I do get a headache. I always ask myself, what is National Treasury doing to support provincial treasuries? I ask myself. For 9 years, I was chairperson for finance in Limpopo. And we were always told by Treasury that every month they communicate with yourself. I don't know whether they were lying or not. And if they were telling us the truth, what is it that you do to support them? Because I'm still bleeding in my heart when I think, I come from Limpopo, by the way, that, you know, a province could be brought to a standstill. Workers could not be paid. People looted in a province. Where were you, Treasury? Where were you? What happens to those reports that you get monthly? Limpopo was looted to nothing. And yet you get information on a monthly basis. I think we must look at that one. What do you do with this information that you get from Treasury? How much do you do to support provincial treasuries? Let's come to the local sphere. I see there's a lot of transfers to, what do you call them, grants. Does Treasury supervise or oversee the spending? Do you have a method where you can actually monitor spending in municipalities? Because we can call them irresponsible, wara wara, but the fact of the matter, we know these people come from Bantu education and they didn't do accounting. And they never in their lives actually worked in accounting firms like me. I was just lucky. And you expect them to run municipalities properly, unassisted. I know there is a section in the Municipal Finance Management Act that says upper spheres have got the responsibility to assist. But the impression that I get is that I see, when I read documents from the Auditor General, the National Department of COCTA does help. But I'm not sure whether the provincial department of COCTA take their responsibilities with assisting the municipalities as seriously as they should. Because it is a law of the Republic that they should do that. Besides, there is Chapter 3 of the Constitution that says that all spheres of government must, anyway, you had your turn. That says that all spheres of government must work in a manner that does not divide the Republic of South Africa. That is what the law says.
And I don't want to hear stories like this department or this. I want to say government. And according to the Constitution, the responsibility of looking after the assets of the state lies with Treasury. So to me, my friend, I will always chase you. You will have to find the culprit. But Nina, to me, what do you call it in court? Because we go to court a lot nowadays. Defendant number one is Treasury. You have to be very careful, because I can put a motion for you to be impeached. If you break the law, Treasury, watch out. I'm after you. The other one is SOEs, eh? SOEs. These are little companies of government that are so lucky and safe that you don't see their faces. We always call the department to account for monies that were given to DTI. But the actual people who use the money is not DTI. I want you, Treasury, to find a place of actually putting these SOEs on your desks, a list of them all. Don't forget one. Because these are the people who actually spend a lot of government money. And I don't know whether they are really accountable. Eh? I don't believe. So my interest, because my interest is to say, as this committee, we have to follow the rand from birth to the grave. From the day of appropriation to the way it was finally spent, which is the SOEs. I want the SOEs here. Growth of the economy is key for Treasury and ourselves. The other committees will deal with the policy issues. But we must make sure that the South African economy grows. And it cannot be that we have got money transferred to provinces, to municipalities, to SOEs, unmonitored. Spend in safety. No. I think we must deal with that. But let me promise you, I don't know, you said something very interesting. You said you sometimes change and you are not Treasury. That was very interesting to me. And you question Treasury. By the way, if you are not, and if you have got that good capacity to question Treasury, who are you? You must tell me, and also leave your business card, because you see me, I research. I'm going to use this thing of yours, and you'll be getting a communication between you and I on a two-day basis. I'll go one by one. I will not leave any paragraph here. You have said here, unresearched. So thank you for now.
Yeah, before I go on to the last two members, I looked across and realized that, and of course I saw Honorable Law and Fick fetching tea from outside. That doesn't sound like understanding. It does sound like what you call it, fruitless expenditure if members don't consume this amount of food. So I shall assume next time that members are not hungry and cut the spending. So I'm saying members, if proper for you to rise and take whatever you want to do. We shall not break for tea or refreshments. I also do want to say to our visitors, as I always say to all of them, you are not excluded from refreshments. You don't. We don't invite people and then cause them to be hungry. So find a minute to grab some tea as well. Honorable C. Mokwanyana, you're next.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair. And thank you very much for a very empowering and enlightening presentation from Treasury. My colleagues have actually touched on a number of things, but I do want to touch on just some. The first one, defense, this issue of understanding. You know, there is somewhere where there are 9.4 vacant posts. We see the figure. When you look at the figure, it's very frightening. But I think it would help if one would know what percentage of vacancies there would be, because we can say it's frightening, and yet to find that it's a small percentage, but it does look like a very huge a number of over 9,000. And in the same defense, the Department of Defense, the ICID, the delays in the vetting process, and this is coupled with the temporary freezing of posts. Now, these two things for me are different. One is puts the department at fault, but the other one of freezing of posts, I think it's not their doing. So it would help a lot if this is unpacked, so that we can see the extent of the delays in this vetting process. But also this word delays, if you look at the presentation, there are so many of these delays. One then would ask, why are there all these delays? Because it just says delays, delays, delays. And for me, that is a serious challenge for the department, that everything is delayed. But why? Why is that happening when there are people who are supposed to be managing the department? Because it's not just one department. And there is, again, the delay in filling off posts of judges and the outstanding invoices. Also, those are two issues. So I'm just mentioning the issue of these delays that really and truly, if departments are going to be functioning like that, then we are in serious trouble. The other one is this, I don't know what slow spending is, underspending and slow spending. I see the concept slow spending is being used here. I will make an example with the communication under administration services, where it says slow spending due to vacancies and transfer payments due in the fourth month. I may have missed what the explanation, but if you can just speak to that. What does it mean, slow spending and then payments during the fourth quarter, and yet we're talking about the third quarter. One other thing is, you know, I was quite concerned when I saw the word major capacity constraints in eight departments like the Department of Health. What does it say to us? Do we have any hope in the department if we have major capacity constraints? Is it at leadership? Is it at operational level? Is it at another level of management? Because if we have major capacity problems, then we have the answers to all the problems that the department is having. Because here, remember, we're talking about the Department of Health and Social Development, a very, very key department. And looking at the same department spending 53% on transfer, delays again, delays in transfers to the HIV and AIDS organizations. I know for a fact that a lot of these organizations are sitting there waiting. Well, I wouldn't say that I know which ones they are, but I know at provincial level that lots and lots of these organizations are not receiving the funding, some of whom have been receiving funding, but the problem of funding has become such a big issue at provincial level. So if we have a department that says so little, it is a matter of concern. And the issue of spending 5.8 due to delay again in the transfer of conditional grants for substance abuse. I know you did also raise concern about the fact that as we're presenting that, you know, this is not acceptable. It's actually criminal. 5.8% is just not on, because as we sit here, we have this problem of substance abuse across the country. We are not able to cope with it, to deal with it adequately. If we spend 5.8%, then we have no hope of getting anywhere. I think I will end there. Thank you very much.
Yes, Honorable Manana.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think I'm the last one. DDG, thank you very much for this presentation. Your apology is accepted, but I think this is the last time. The first issue that I would like to raise is with regards to the environment that you talked about earlier on. If those departments who are doing those can be named and shame them, if we can have a report for the past 3 years, who were the culprits of this, so that we can deal with them accordingly. And because that thing is just a fiscal dumping, we need to talk about it very seriously. The second issue, Chairperson, what is happening with this document? Environment, I'm done with it. Okay. The next issue is with regards to the telecommunication and postal services. The 5.5% is a concern to us. I think as a committee, we need to have a meeting so that we can deal with this matter once and for all. I heard you, DDG, trying to explain what are the problems, but this matter is long overdue. If we can remember that this broadband thing was one mentioned by the late Minister of Communication, Mamo Ivy, but we are still dealing with it as of now. Other issues have been raised of low spending, especially in the disaster relief fund. It's a serious concern. You know, there were people who have killed themselves precisely of this matter. So it needs to be addressed as soon as possible. The issue of the defense, public order and safety, the civilian secretariat of the police service, it is a concern, because since they are going to overspend, and they are going to spend money which they don't have it. We heard that you have raised this matter with them many a times, but it seems as if they are still continuing. We need to find out from them. Maybe we can ask them a question to come and explain to us how are they going to manage this matter. Chairperson, I'm from Mpumalanga. You know, when you talk CTG with regards to the University of Mpumalanga, I was a bit touched, because I'm thinking everything is going well there, but if they are going to underspend, it it's a concern to me because the people of whom they are very crazy about this university and they think it's going to help them. Other questions they have been raised by my colleagues, but I want to come to the issue of the non-profit institutions, which they are not getting their transfers in time. I know there are NPOs who are mushrooming left and right. Others, they are not genuine enough, but they are just collecting money from the government. That is why there are strict measures that they need to find out whether these are the really genuine NPOs who are dealing with the HIV and AIDS issues. I think even the Department of Health and Social Development, sometimes they need to come in and present their issue here, because I know there are so many who are claiming to be doing the job, but meanwhile they are not. The last issue is with regards to us. As members of parliament, I was a bit touched when one of my colleagues said there are people who are asking petrol slips. I think they need to be name and shame, because it seems as if all of us, we do not have ethical leadership. Because if we are generalizing, people outside there, they are going to say, oh, members of parliament, they know each other, they are collecting leads from the barrage, and it's normal. They are talking as if there's nothing wrong with it. I think my colleague, next time we need to name and shame those people, and they need to be punished for that. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I think that there are probably two issues that National Treasury may not necessarily directly answer. The first is the PCO funds. That issue is a lot more internal. It's a Parliament issue, because it's Parliament that funds the PCOs. I know that there is a committee now that looks at the whole spending of Parliament's budget, and that issue falls into that category. If there is such information that members are worried about, then you should be worried, because indeed we debate Parliament's budget and pass that budget, and this committee is part of appropriating those funds. But I think we need to find a way of dealing with that issue as Parliament's internal matter in the first instance. But of course, National Treasury being the people who handle the country's fiscal. We probably are saying they should find space of sitting with the Committee of Parliament and addressing this issue. The second issue is one that Honorable Law raised with regards to the availability of National Treasury when we call departments. And I think that it's a matter that we must deal with in our internal programming, so that when we hold public hearings, I know that in our program we have public hearings with certain identified departments. If we could ask National Treasury to make themselves available, we will alert them, so that we are able to have this conversation with these departments in their presence, so that we don't hear different stories. And when there are contradictory messages, we can then deal with the issue there and then without us having to go back to National Trade and say, but this department said this the other day. So we should be able to fine-tune our progress so that we are able to contain that. But, and that's the reason why, for instance, last week we couldn't meet DPME in the absence of, the Department of Public Service and Administration in the absence of DPME, because we wanted them together, as we will do with the other departments, where we said DPME must meet with this department to clarify these issues so that when they come to us, they come to us together, and we don't hear different stories from one department and other stories from the other department, especially the DPME being the overall monitor and evaluator of everybody else. So I'm saying those are some of those are two issues which perhaps may not necessarily be responded to today. The issue of the third issue of reviewing the incentives, I suggest let's leave National Treasury to deal with that issue and come back and report to us, because they have raised it. But perhaps what I think we must suggest is that they, together with DPME, DTI, EDD, Department of Small Business Development, must find each other on this particular issue, have a conversation and deal with that issue, and then we should be able to talk further on that particular, because it's an issue that members have been worried about. That government, through the budget processes, have incentives and all sorts of other allowances to business. And we don't seem to be able to put a finger at the product, the outcome of these incentives. Because in our view, incentives to business, private sector businesses, must give us three major things. The first is increased manufacturing and competitiveness. The second is creation of decent jobs with a crisis of unemployment. The third is economic growth. And if these incentives don't give us these three basic things, then we, as government, we must rethink the logic of giving incentives. I do know that in the automotive industry, there have been some good results, but is that the only story we can tell? Automotive. What about the other incentives elsewhere? And all sorts of other, the jobs funds, what is sometimes broadly termed tax holidays, etc., and so on, aimed at stimulating economic growth, competitiveness in the economy, and job creation. So these are things that members are very worried about. And we think that we shouldn't speak about them piecemeal. Do your review, your assessment. Have a conversation with these key departments, even in areas where you think this one department should take this part of it and give it to someone else. Have that conversation, and we must have a fuller discussion with yourselves on the outcome of this so that we make sense of what you are intimating to us should be done. Let me hand over to National Treasury to respond to some of the questions, or to the questions that you have raised, not some of them, all of them, if possible.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I'm going to ask Mark Blecher to start. Unfortunately, he has to leave and catch a flight, so can I do it to you, Chair, since you just quickly respond and to permit our lives to leave.
Thank you, Honourable Chairperson. I'd like to start with the question of the condoms. Honourable members will probably know that the Department of Health has taken over responsibility for most of their own tenders now, particularly most of the medicine tenders. Around 90% of the medicine tenders are now done by the department. They've built up quite a lot of capacity to do tenders, but I think it may be that they're spending a lot of emphasis on getting the lowest price. And as the Honourable Member said, they may not be paying sufficient attention to dealing with risk management, because sometimes it can be useful to spread the tender across a number of different parties, because if one supplier then fails to supply, then at least there are others who can stand in. So I think if Honourable Member think about this also with reference to the medicine shortfalls that happened over the course of the past year. And several times, there was money for the medicines, there were tenders, but individual companies were not supplying. So I think that would be a useful discussion to have with the Department of Health. They've certainly built a great deal of excellent capacity in procurement. But I think the issue of risk management does merit some additional attention. Honourable Chairperson, also what happened over the past year with respect to condoms and many other medicines is that the rand has depreciated by 30%. And what this does in the case of condoms is it puts up the price of condoms of the rubber that the companies provide to make the condom by about 30%. Suddenly, many companies with these high input costs don't then want to supply. There have been two increases in condom prices since the depreciation, but still there are problems in this. So part of this is also an issue of contract enforcement. This is a significant problem, this condom issue. In fact, in the case of the health sector, a lot of these last end-of-year environments were in fact made from condom budgets. Almost probably, I'd say, 80 to 100 million underspent on condoms towards the end of the year, a lot of that being then vied off towards the end of the year to other things. I think it is worthwhile the committee engaging with the department, at least through a written question, if not in person, because this is not the first year we have problems with condom supply, and I think I agree completely with the Honourable Member's point about this is a domestic industry which really we could do in South Africa and we could create more jobs through it. I think trying to think about procurement also as a way of stimulating an industry, I think is an excellent point here. If I may go on to then, Honourable Chairperson, to the question of the low spending of the substance abuse, the current 2% spending of the grant. Now there are, in addition to the problem of low spending, some of this is a problem about the way that social development is managing the grant, where they're attempting to, rather than what happens with most departments, where they pay on the agreed dates in advance of the province's spending, DSD is not very experienced in managing conditional grants, and they have been attempting to keep on altering the cash flows to effectively pay invoices. So they ask for an invoice from Northern Cape or from Northwest, and then they want to change the cash flow and pay the invoice. That's very different to the way most departments manage conditional grants, which is to pay in advance, to give provinces money in advance in order to run projects. So, for example, in the case of Northwest, because this is four substance abuse centers, one in each of four provinces, the Northwest has in fact spent about 14 million on building their substance abuse center, but the department only transferred 2 million, and they're waiting for invoices to transfer. That's not the way that a scheduled five conditional grant is supposed to work. It's something we have talked to the department about. And I think they need to handle the way they handle this grant differently. There is quite a lot of progress on the Northwest Centre and the Eastern Cape Centre. They'll be largely finished towards the end of the year. There are quite a lot of delays in the center in Free State and also to some extent in Northern Cape. But I think that this issue of the slow spending on the substance abuse grant is an issue that is worth engaging with social development through the committee chair. I think it is an area. And this issue of low transfers to NGOs is definitely an ongoing problem in social development. Social development in the provinces is the sector that works most with NGOs, and in many cases there's in a way a dumping actually there as well. We're spending, it should be happening early on in the year to allow an organization to work through the course of the year. It's getting funds very late. In the case of the eight NGOs here, the capacity has been such a problem in the organization that towards the end of the year they've actually entered into a partnership with SANAC. And they're hoping that SANAC will help them going forward with some of the AIDS NGOs. And we think that's probably a good thing to do. But generally on the approach to NGOs, they do need to improve that. And so it's something that we have ongoing work with them. We've been in a joint project. We've actually developed this treasury about 100-page report where a kind of set of recommendations and analysis on better working with NGOs, which we'd be happy to share with the committee, Honourable Chairperson, if you would like, on an improved way of working with NGOs. It's a report we did jointly with the department. Chairperson, just on the slow spending on the indirect National Health Insurance grant, this very important program, so this is slow spending on both the revitalization component and the National Health Insurance component. Spending on both these components, honourable members, is actually, although still low, is very substantially improved from the previous 2 years. The one for the GP contracting was extremely low for the past 2 years. Actually, much improved, and towards the end of the year, we expect that this money, in fact, will be largely fully spent. There are questions, though, a bit on the revitalization component about the breadth of projects that the department is doing. They're doing really a very wide range of different projects, from nursing colleges to clinics to hospitals to GP centers. Remember, all of this is the national department doing it on behalf of provinces, so it's quite far from the national. And in some cases, there's questions also around the unit costs of these projects with respect to this question about spending, but also value for money. So I think there are issues pertaining to that program, but there is a lot of improvement on the GP spending. The numbers of GPs being contracted has increased from 150 last year to 310 this year, which is quite a big improvement, and we expect there will be mainly spending on that program by the end of the year. Thank you, Chairperson. I think other colleagues.
So if there's, okay, I don't know if there's any other question on health and or social development, then we can release my clear permission.
Development? Anything? No? Let's go on to the next one.
So thank you, Chair. Chair, I've got colleagues here, you know, who will be, maybe let me start with them. To me, if you want to take the defense, I think was an issue of the police and the 9,513. Those kind of questions, and then Lapi, you continue.
Thank you, Chair. So I'll try and respond to, I think, the issues that were raised by honorable members around the slow spending in defense, public order and safety. Generally, the issue there is that because the cluster is such a labor-intensive cluster, so it employs a lot of people. So generally what happens is that you will have 6,000 vacancies today in police, for example. The department goes on a recruitment drive to recruit the 6,000 people, but then at the same time, they've got other 6,000 people that are exiting the system for various other reasons, natural attrition being one of them. Others are going on pension. So generally when you have a department or cluster that is labor intensive and employs a lot of people, you will generally get that movement in numbers. So that's one of the main reasons why you would see the numbers being high. But what then happens is that in some cases, having those the high number of vacant posts, does not necessarily have a direct impact on spending, because in the case of the police, we would have seen in the last 2 or 3 months where they make public announcement around promotions and issues of great progression within the police service. So because they don't necessarily have funding within their budget to provide for such things, when they do have the vacant post, then they would begin to start using the funds that would have been reserved to fill a position to start implementing issues around great progression and promotions within the department. That has been happening. But generally within the cluster also, what was unique about 2015-16 is the fact that because we had the public sector wage agreement that was above inflation, so a lot of the departments deliberately did not want to fill vacant positions such that they can first see what the impact on the budget will be of them implementing the public sector wage agreement, and then after that begin to see whether or not they still have funds available to fill how many positions. So that was the other main issue that happened in the cluster. And I think there were also issues of concern raised around, I think there was a question by the honorable member on ITID and delays in the vetting process and the freezing of positions. So the reason provided in the presentation with regards to the freezing of vacant position is what I've just explained now, where the department has to freeze their vacant position until such time that they've made the back payments in relation to the 2015 public sector wage agreement. And then depending on how much was left on their budget, they were then able to say, this is the number of vacant positions that we can fill. Because if departments don't do that, and no money was provided in the adjusted estimates, then we would be facing a situation where you've got a lot of them that are overspending, because they would have made the payment, filled the positions at the same time, only to realize later on that actually they did not have enough money on their budget. So in some cases, that was the rationale for freezing vacant positions. And with the issue of vetting in ITID, specifically impacts on investigators, because they are an investigation-led department, vetting for them is very important, because before they can appoint an investigator to investigate the police, they must be certain that this person has got the necessary security clearance. So if there are delays in the process from doing that, then that automatically has a direct impact on their ability to fill positions for investigators. So it's certainly one of the main reasons that they've communicated to the National Treasury around why they are underspending. Hence, now they are beginning to develop capacity in-house to deal with issues of vetting so that they don't have to rely so much on state security. Then there was also the issue with the, I think, civilian secretariat and what we were flagging up for the committee to note, the fact that they will most likely overspend. The challenge with overspending is that in some cases it is brought on by a specific event. In the case of the civilian secretariat, when we were facing xenophobic attacks in the country in April, they implemented a campaign that drove expenditure. It was unplanned because they did not know that they were going to have the xenophobic attacks, but it's something that is within their mandate to do. So it happened very early on in the financial year, and it drove their spending. So what we've been saying to the department since then is that now that you've had this event that was unplanned and that you had not budgeted for, but you've had to incur expenditure for, then going forward, you need to then decide as a department, how are you going to cut costs in other environments such that at the end of the financial year, you don't overspend. So those are the engagements that we've been having with the department. It's very difficult to stop certain things because certain expenditure is non-discretionary. So even though they would have had the once-off event that drove expenditure, they still need to make sure on a monthly basis that they pay the salaries and all of those things. So expenditure will continue as it relates to the non-discretionary expenditure. But we've been saying to them, for those items that are within their control, like your travel, your communication, and so forth, that's where the expenditure needed to be curbed. And they did do that, but our view on that it was done very late in the year when certain decisions were taken in the department to cut allowances and all of that. But what it's going to do, we are hoping when we now get the outcome of the actual expenditure in 2015-16 is that the magnitude that they would have incurred of overspending for 2015-16 will be far less than what it would have been had we not, you know, been engaging them to try and contain costs. I think those were the main issues for the cut.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I'm just going to touch on some of the issues. There was a question raised on the 30-day payment, the concern about that. The OCPO is currently the first draft of the document and it's been discussed internally in National Treasury, where outline is going to be set up, so where a service provider is not receiving his money, he will be able to contact the outline, and the National Treasury will intervene from our side. Then this is just a matter of a process being put in place to ensure that service providers do receive their money within 30 days. There was also a question raised about underspending and fiscal dumping in the fourth quarter. This one remains a concern with National Treasury. It's not always that easy to pinpoint who are the people that is doing the fiscal dumping. But what we normally do is, with the fourth quarter, we do raise all the questions, those payments, big payments going through in the fourth quarter, and we want answers and responses from departments. What was the reasons for that and so on. So it's not something that we just let lying, we do follow up with departments. There was a question on slow spending on the communication side and whether it is not underspend. It is just a way of how we present the documentation. If a department was supposed to spend 75% for the same quarters and their spending at this stage is only 65%, they could catch up in the fourth quarter. So we see that stage as slow spending and not necessarily as underspending. But where we know a project has been cancelled, or then at the end of the fourth quarter you have that money not being spent, obviously then that is an underspending. There was also a question raised on whether spending of departments is in line with predetermined objectives. That is more on the terrain of EPME. But in the budget documentation, there are a set of criteria for each department, each vote, the objective that they are intended to reach. And any spending by department outside of those objectives would be regarded as unauthorized expenditure.
Thank you, Chair. For the Economic Services Cluster of Departments, I've noted two questions from the Honourable Members. The one relates to the incentives. We share your comments and sentiments regarding the incentive review, and I'm sure once the reviews be concluded by DPME, it will be shared with the committee, the outcome of the review. The other issue that was raised by the members was the issue concerning the special appropriation for ESCOM. Just to note that the delay was caused as a result of the DPE having said that to confirm with ESCOM that they've met the appropriation conditions. Those conditions have been met and the transfer has subsequently taken place regarding that special appropriation. Thank you.
Thank you, Ricardo. So I think to add a little bit on the review, we fully agree with to those three points is what the review must do, and we are doing it. If you noticed in the budget review 2016-17, we did commit in there that we will be conducting reviews jointly with DPME, and obviously what we didn't think, and I was up front with the committee, small business development was not part of the mix. So we have got the terms of reference jointly with DPME, and we'll need to bring those to three departments. And I think it would be proper that we do it.
and which we take to heart exactly what you suggested. And we also take into heart that it should not only be this, it should include the whole spectrum of reviews, including tax holidays, jobs funds, employment checks, incentives, and that at some point we'll come back to you with a fuller discussion that we take. And now, what is a bit confusing and a bit, on one hand I'm excited with it, and on one hand I'm a bit cautious, is how the committee is putting this issue across around what Honorable Manana was saying, issues around ethical leadership and the example about the petrol. We have said carefully in the way we engage legislatures, all nine, including national, in the way we engage once the transfer is made, because at some point here we are always careful of being reminded in the engagements that we have with the offices around separation of powers and we always find it difficult as to whether we but I hear in terms of our role, our mandate, if it's public finances, where do we come in? And in particular, I must mention to the committee, because I think this must be clear knowledge, that we have had engagements. I personally had engagements with the CFO in Parliament. I've had engagements around budgets as we are moving towards 16-17. I personally had conversations together with our DGs, conversations with the Secretary of Parliament, and the latest engagement was a week or two ago when our DG was actually invited to the workshop that was held with other legislators here in Cape Town at Claymont, where issues around cost containment were being discussed from a treasury point of view. And then obviously there's another meeting that still has to take place. We are almost going to meet in December, but unfortunately we couldn't. So with the change of ministers, we still have to set a meeting between the minister and the speaker and the chairs. But I think this is a positive step to, especially in the cost, it's always in the cost containment, reduced budgets, constrained fiscal environment, that we have to start sharing our experiences in terms of how we implement cost containment, and Parliament also to take into account, and various other legislatures take into account measures that we think are important. And I guess that space, as it develops, it will give us an opportunity to raise hardcore issues around spending, efficiency of spending, and Parliament obviously taking precautionary measures in averting such. But this is a very, and I think we have to tread carefully. We will, and as I'm saying, there's a window of engagement that we've opened and we are using it. And we don't want to appear as if we're trading on Parliament. But it's something that I think we'll carefully have to engage with moving forward. And obviously we'll find ways as to how best to interact with the committee that we're talking about, the PCO committee that you mentioned earlier on. Now, the question about NPOs, when I spoke about University of Mpumalanga, it was more that, the spending, capital spending would be in that category. So you may want to find out that maybe University of Mpumalanga spending capex is up to each other. They need more money, by the way, in particular. But overall, that program in higher education, there's slow spending. I'm happy Yapi did explain. I prefer, and committee will remember the last time, members will recall that we use the word lag, and you don't see it anywhere in our documentation. I mean, so it's not there, it shouldn't appear. Then what you introduced, which I was at pains with my colleagues, looking, because I don't like understanding. It doesn't give a true picture. I want to use underspending after quarter four. Then clear there, because we're saying slow spending, they are slow in spending, and there was a question around slow spending vis-a-vis transfers in the fourth quarter. What that simply means is that in the fourth quarter, payments will still be made, and as a result, you'll only at that point see whether there was under or overspending. And even then, you will not see it now in April, by the way, or in May. You'll only see it after the 31st of May, as you know. If I can put my head on the block, I can only say you'll only see after the 31st of August, once the audit process is complete. Then I can comfortably talk about numbers and whether it was over or underspending. So these are just soft numbers after the financial year end for the 2 months.
Once they are submitted to the Auditor General on the 31st of May, they are still stopped until a point when they are interacted. But for now, I think committee must allow us to chair through you, just to say there will be a slow spending, but we'll be able to explain as and when. But where there's clear cases, like Mpumi was indicating that with the civilian secretariat, they, you know, it was clear from where we sit, because they've incurred a program which was not, which or incurred expenditure which was new, like as an example, the interventions when there were xenophobic attacks. We, this clear expenditure that we can see, that we are saying clearly it might lead to overspending, but we're still saying to them they must try and act within budget. Disaster Relief Fund, I think it's important we jointly with COFTA, we need to ensure that money is spent and that. We've said it in my presentation, I mean in my input earlier on, that it's a concern around broadband, it's long overdue, 5.5% is not even. But it's mainly also because of the example that I gave about making sure that we, procuring process or procurement process is done or dealt with, because Telkom being appointed, you know, must be dealt with appropriately. And the environment will certainly make, you know, we'll know that for our purposes, that when we come back to you on the environment story, as I put it on earlier on, we'll come back with a 3 years information that will give you an idea what we're dealing with. Mark dealt with issues of substance abuse, slow spending, slide 18 under we dealt with, defense we dealt with. Now in terms of who are we, I think Honorable Shoppers told is clear that, you know, there's something sometimes we remove ourselves. This division called public finance in the National Treasury is mainly responsible for overseeing management and revenue spending of national government departments, all, including the National Treasury. Because in some cases, we call the National, just like all my colleagues will interact with all other 39 departments, the same questions, we'll call the DG of the National Treasury, we'll call the And the system appreciates that. The system appreciates that that's how it's structured. Where the CFO must account on spending on the jobs funds, and we sometimes hold them. It's very difficult if I have to call DG and say, DG, your program, you have it. I mean, can you imagine what that does? But he, you know, where we sit, the system understands and appreciates that we then become, because we have to make sure that departments spend resources. Now, if SOEs, we have made sure that SOEs become our agenda moving forward. We cannot just transfer, I mean, if you look at SOEs across, whether you're talking SAA, including, by the way, which is very important, and there's a division in the National Treasury called Intergovernmental Relations that mainly deal with provinces and municipalities and support municipalities and provinces. This is the same division that the member was asking about. It's the same division that will meet with provincial treasurers on a monthly basis in a committee called the Technical Committee for Finance. TCF is comprised of all 9 heads of treasury, including ourselves. We interact on intergovernmental matters and as all of them. And as you know, the statutory body that gives expression to the Technical Committee for Finance is the Budget Forum and the Budget Council. Now, these two FORA, or these two IMCs, not IMCs, what is it called? MINMEX. The Budget Council and the Budget Forum are established as per the Intergovernmental Fiscal Relations Act of 1997. They are statutory bodies, and these two, this committee called the TCF supports that, and we meet on an ongoing basis. Not only to exchange information, but for peer review mechanisms, for implementation of things that work in one province should work in another. And all 9 of us, with them, we sit and then we actually interact. Now, it's an important for it works in some cases, but it's also dependent, Chair, on the efficiencies that are there in the system, in province specific efficiencies. If you think about Section 100 intervention, and I know Parliament over the years has engaged with this issue,
And the question is, where were we? We were there, and we are the ones who actually lifted the flag. We are the ones who went to Parliament, I mean to Cabinet, and say, Cabinet, we are noticing these issues. If the trend is going the way it's going, this, and we have warned long before December of that year. There's a memo that I saw in July of that year in August that kept warning the department, because this issue would have been, if you have to go back in history, you pick up that this issue was raised at this monthly meeting around challenges that might, that we see across provinces. And we are open, we see. We put up stuff for all nine provinces to engage on in this committee. And it was clear at the time that, you know, there were red flags everywhere around Limpopo and around what was happening. So, but however, I think since then there are systems in place. And then the reasons are wide ranging, obviously, and I'm not going to now go into those details. Some of you are. The province was not, Chair, the province was not going to be able to pay salaries that month, that November. And we made sure, because we could see they were running huge overdrafts at the time, 500. So we went in because we could see the red flags. And I think systems that we have put in place since then, we are able and will be able to see if they're okay in other provinces. Now, our intergovernmental fiscal system is evolving over time. And I think we should appreciate what we are into, both. And again, Parliament, if Parliament thinks about the implementation of the PFMA, when we put together the PFMA and we, you know, we had experts, international experts helping us put the, we thought at the time we're putting the best piece of legislation. Actually, we actually uploaded across the world about what we were able to put together in the form of the PFMA between 96 and 97. By the time we implemented this in 97-98, we implemented it in various phases, if you remember. And then some, because we are building an estate, we are building institutions that will work. And then we thought at some point we are able to, for provinces and national departments, we are on track, and we are all amalgamating 14 education departments, 14 national, if you remember what it meant to build a state that we are in now. Now the question was municipalities, and the question, Honorable Shobema was asking the same. Would you do it in from municipalities? What oversight do you have? I think with the introduction of the MFMA, with the experiences that we learned when implemented the PFMA, we also had to phase in some sections of the MFMA and the role, designate some municipalities that will report directly to us, designate some responsibilities that will go direct, municipalities that will be responsible directly to provincial departments, provincial treasuries. So I see it as a system that's evolving, and you know, we are fortunate that most of us in the treasury were able to see it from the beginning in the 90s to see the implementation now, which hasn't been easy, and the system hasn't been very efficient in rolling that out, because it was all learning, and we're all learning by as we go along. So it hasn't been easy, but I think where we are, I'm comfortable in that. Both our implementation and oversight role on provinces, oversight role on municipalities is starting to bear fruit. One of the reforms, for instance, in the Treasury, we are able to, in the Treasury, within this intergovernmental relations department, we're able to form or to put up a unit called Municipal Budget Analysis. We never had it before. Provincial budget analysis was always there from the late 90s. So where this department is highly capacitated to be focused on municipalities. And I think with the kind of information that's out there now, the consolidations that we are able to make, we are able to slowly get to grips with spending in municipalities. And sooner or later, we should be on par in terms of information that we can make available to committees for you to be able to play oversight roles. But I know 3, 4, 5 years ago, I wouldn't put my head on the block around the development in municipalities. Yes, for metros, yes, but not for your other category B or even small municipalities. So I think we are on our way to really making sure that we get to where we are. The other new interesting, and I'm answering another question, the other new interesting development, by all means, the Department of Performance Monitoring and Evaluation is a new department. You can argue that it's been around 5 or whatever years, but having seen where we come from in the 90s,
is a new department. It's still finding its feet, and we have to, the synergy between us and them still has to work. It is not perfect. If out of 10 being the best, I would comfortably say we are at 4.5 or even 5 in terms of the synergies between us and them. Them understanding where we come from, and also them understanding their role. Because some of the questions today, especially around the question of impact, for instance, we give money, but the impact, we should be calling on them and say, we have given money, we are sure that the spending, on surface, the spending is on track, but beneath it, I don't know, you as DPM, you should be able to tell us. No, as part of our reform, and I appreciate Honorable Lowe's suggestion and you, Chair, supporting that, at some point, not only us, by the way, including GPME, we should come at the front together, talking with the department, and you interacting with the department X, and then we can, from a funding point of view, from a performance point of view, because they are accountable for outcomes. The performance indicators are in their domain. They should actually play that role. Now, for them to understand or to get to that level, it's not easy. I mean, we had a meeting 2 days ago on Monday with them, and we are meeting again tomorrow with them, just so that we take each other through building some of the things that we think they should be performing. In the early years, in the 90s, I remember, in our case, we touched you both. I remember the classic example was when we went to Mpumalanga 1 year, because they were spending and we were not sure what spending was. There was this bridge built, there was no river underneath, there was no free nothing, it was in the middle of nowhere. So we took this picture and we showed it to the budget council. But we could only do that, but we couldn't, I mean, her country is big, the treasury at the time was very, very small. So, but in future we expect the Department of Monitoring to be saying, here are the performance plans, this is the target, how many toilets have you built? How many kilometers of roads based on the plan have you built? So planning, and that's why I think national planning must strengthen themselves, look at the NDP, help us synergize the NDP and the MTSF, so that budget priorities and funded priorities find expression from them. So currently, and if you listen carefully, the criticism that people have been pushing against us was that Treasury is just on a tangent. They are funding their own priorities that are not linked to the MTSF, not linked to the NDP. That's why we tried a change in this 16-17 budget, in Chapter 5, in particular, Chapter 5 of the budget review. We tried to link money and priorities in the NDP and MTSF. Small table, small paragraph showing that, because the criticism was that, but in the absence of guidance from GPME, in the absence of guidance from the Planning Commission in terms of what are priorities, what's difficult. Priorities will come from NDP, priorities will come from NTSS, 9-point plan, the election manifesto of the ruling party. Now, if you think about all of those, in a constrained fiscal environment, we are not able to match. But it is when Treasury is told that there are 6 or 5 or 6 critical priorities that you must fund. Then we can fund, and then we can make the links easy and know what we're funding, and there's a systematic way of doing it. But as I'm saying, we are a young democracy, and you know better than me on the front, and we are building a state, and it's not easy to just build a state when all of us, basically from 95, 94, 95, we're all new, and then we're starting a new government, if you think about it. So, by any standard, if you compare ourselves with the US, with the UK, with Japan, all of these, I mean, these are 300, 400 year old, some of them democracies, and we obviously have to emulate them one way or the other. In our case, we are a young democracy, and that's, sometimes we use that defense and say we are building, and at some point, we don't put the proper brick for the brick is going to fall, and that's what I've seen in the 17 or 18 years in the Treasury, that bricks have fallen so many times. And whether it's SABS approved brick force or normal wire, it's always an issue, Chair, and we try. So I'm trying to deal with, I think I've dealt with all Honorable Shoppe Stoller's questions. Now, Honorable Sik raised a number of things, spending growth of 10%, relationship with revenue. The targets, revenue targets will be fixed. They will be voted and they will be fixed. The revenue side, because you are managing it, and this committee is about today is about looking at a quarterly basis. You can measure it because you're not checking as to how much revenue have you collected in the third quarter. You do it twice a year, at budget, and you also do it at adjusted and budget during the MTBPS in October. That's when Minister of Finance will present revenue estimates. But expenditure we can see, because revenue estimates has got two processes two critical things that influences revenue targets. One is the growth, economic growth. If there's no growth, then we revise downward. And obviously that impacts on collection. SARS announced a few weeks ago that they've collected 154 million over. Again, that's subject obviously to auditing and so on and so on. The refunds have been factored in to see the actual number. But also, in terms of now, on the debt side, when we go into the market on a weekly basis, and I informed the committee last time, we go in the market and borrow 15 billion rand on a weekly basis, raise bonds here and there. By the way, just as a confidence building measure, as an announcement, we issued a bond last week. We needed 1.5 billion. We got it was oversubscribed by almost $250 million. So, if as much as there's noise out there, you know, we think if we are able to oversubscribe, our bonds are able to be oversubscribed. That means people are not very very worried about what we do. So, we were able to, if you think like it happened, and I think at some point we might share this. As it happened in December, when uncertainty kicked in, the amount of money that we spent, the spread as they call it, those who raise money, or the interest in bonds, increased by almost 2%. So it became more expensive to borrow because of the uncertainties. Another thing, and we've been saying that, the Minister of Finance has been saying that since in the past 2-3 months, the rating agencies and whether we're going to go on junk or not, that will have an impact in terms of our pricing of our bonds, and any mistake that we do may impact. So revenue in that case has got those things that influence it. So it's not easy just to say for a quarter this was the revenue, but it's easy for expenditure because it's fixed; it's not going to change, and revenue might increase or might decrease. If it increases, we're all smiling and happy because our deficit level is reduced, and that's what we want. We want that deficit level or the primary balance to be zero, as we've always said. So NHI, Mark addressed NHI and the challenges. DTI, we talked about. Capacity problem, we addressed that. Or PLASA, on the low, the amount there is 2.56 billion. Just the difference, And, yeah, you're right. I mean, the Department of Energy is, obviously should account for slow spending. The solar heater geyser problem is, when I say change of approach, the approach what we all knew is that we knew ESCOM was going to roll out this. When we check ESCOM is not spending. There's 1.2 billion lying there, not doing anything. So we then had to. The department, because we are on one hand, we are pressurizing the department. We're saying, where, in terms of your plan, you said ESCOM is going to help you roll out this. ESCOM is not. We want to take the money. Then, then they relook at the plan so that the department, the delivery model changes, and the department wants capacity within the department to be able to roll out the program. So that's why there's a change, and again, it's something that you can engage the Department of Energy on in more detail. We will make sure that list of departments where we think the fiscal dumping will make sure it's available. And those three provinces where, it's not five actually, it's six. After checking with the colleagues, it's six. It's Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Northwest, Free State, KZN, and Northern Cape. Limpopo, Eastern Cape, Northwest, Free State, KZN, and Northern Cape. These are the five provinces where the slow spending in the math, science, and technology grant. So, again,
intergovernmental fora, the TCF that I mentioned, these slides will be put up, and then conversations will emerge as to why is it so spending? And then in a collegial way, colleagues among all 10 treasuries are able to engage and share experiences where need be, in order to make sure that provinces spend. Now, one thing that I mentioned, and I think was mentioned twice around announcements by the Minister of Finance around personnel and so on. Now, 15-16 is a different year from 16-16, and you know, in that, in 15-16, in this report, we are declaring the fact that there's underspending as a result of vacancy. That's one. And then because of that, and 15-16 is, or it's coming to an end, or it's just come to an end, as part preparation for 16-17, as early as August, September, October last year, we started making noise around what essentially is money that is lying in personal budgets that's not spent. And on one hand, then we started making noise. We did that in the MTVPS, we did that in the budget. Why the noise, and why the low economic growth calls for low, almost constrained fiscal environment that we've always talked about, which meant we had to cut budgets. We had to cut budgets by 10 and 15 billion rand for 17, 18, 19. And we also had to cut, in particular, personnel budgets by 10 billion and 15 billion. It just happened to be the same numbers. So we needed money to balance out, or to be at levels, deficit levels that are acceptable to yourselves as parliament, to South Africans as a whole, to rating agencies, so that we are able to demonstrate our ability to live within our means. So as a result, we have to cut spending. Now, if you say you're cutting 25 billion over 2 years, then effectively you mean you are cutting numbers. You are not going to employ. If at any given point in time in correctional services or defense, or there were vacancies, or I know in the treasury, for instance, you know, when a person resigns, you can't fill it, because we have to reach a target. What we did, and at some point I think we must come back to the committee, as part of reaching the 25 billion over 2 years, saving in 17, 18, 18, 19, how is that amount of 25 billion distributed across all government departments? We have to make that available to those. Maybe let's do that to the committee, so that the committee can see, as part contribution to the saving of 25 billion, what are each department going to contribute towards that? Effectively, this is a simple way of saying numbers must be cut. Whether through a voluntary severance package, if the DPSA uses that as a tool, or other savings methods. Meaning you are reducing numbers, personal numbers in government. And that's what it means. So we don't have a tool as yet. We have said we will lock personnel. You might have read in the newspapers or heard it in the budget. And from 1st of April, we are not even going to do that, because, again, in the trying to make sure that we get the story right, again we announce, but we think we'll be able to implement that from 1st of October this year, in trying to ensure that departments remain within budget, personal budget, or reduce personal budget. We have the authority or the mandate of managing personnel, we are able to close it, and then no one can be employed in the system, because that's the only tool. Now, provinces have been doing that for a while, by the way. We met in the TCF 2 days ago, Monday. We are sharing experiences. Free State, Gauteng, Mpumalanga to an extent, and Western Cape. They've introduced locking of personnel a long time ago. So we're learning experience what it means, because from a system point of view, one mess up, then you are in trouble. So we're able to share experiences, how they did it and how they can advise that we do it, and still have a system of ensuring that critical non-OSD positions are not filled. Because critical positions need to be filled. If the doctors or nurses or police officers, those we're not going to lock. I mean, but admin positions, and other non-OSD positions will have to obviously block in the system. So we have a way of trying to contain, and that's what I think the Minister of Finance meant, because it's lessons experienced in 15-16 and what we're doing about it. In 16-17 we are saying, because there are huge amounts of underspending, we are going to take the money, because we need the money anyway. But the challenge, which is always a difficult balancing act, is at least for doctors, nurses, police officers, we're not worried, because those positions will always be there. But for the rest, we'll have to stop and make sure that we control spending. I'm just going to condoms you addressed. The issue of drugs, I can't agree. I mean, Omar Madala is pretty clear. Water and sanitation, drought, those are key, and the implementation plan is critical. And I think we'll have to demand from the Department of Water and Sanitation what the implementation is, because underspending in this era, especially around the drought and the water challenge that we have as a country, cannot be. And yes, a transfer does not need planning at all. I totally agree. I mean, it's assumed that all you do is to transfer, like we do. I mean, we transfer money to state security agencies, we transfer money to SARS, we'll transfer money to the BRICS banks, international organizations, African Renaissance Fund. These are transfers. So, because there are accounting systems and accountability frameworks built in, someone must check on SARS, state security, as to what they do with the money transfers. So imagine Treasury cannot spend, SARS cannot spend because Treasury did not transfer. So I agree with you. And to the team, and that's why I spoke about mode of engagement here, to the team, that it cannot, under these circumstances, be business as usual. And part of the reason, by the way, I should have said it up front, we decided to bring three directors to the committee today to say, your chief directors have interacted with the committee before. And now we want you to understand the kind of issues and questions that members ask. So that when you interact with the department and your teams, because they've got a few teams under them as analysts, as junior analysts, to make sure that you actually look at the right places. So that's part of our empowering kind of mechanism that we've built in getting analysts in the Treasury, in public finance in particular, to the mode to change. Don't, it's not business as usual. Ask more, probe more, and interfere. And I said earlier in my presentation, I said, be inquisitive more than you've always been, still within the law and still not being arrogant. And with that we stress, because there's also a narrative that says when Treasury engages, people tend to be a bit arrogant. But it's important that you humble in the way you engage, but still get what you need, because you need to pass the information to the committees for various reasons, for them to play an oversight role. Because where the committee sit, we are from the school of thought that says the whip, we don't carry the whip, we carry the information. The whip must come from the committees and from the oversight committees of parliament. Now, yes, planning and implementation is critical, especially managing the debt and the borrowing. We did that. What do we mean when we say the committee has failed to spend? That's what I explained. I mean, they spending. It's not in line with the plans. As a result, the solar heater program in energy did not kick off because of poor planning, I guess, from a risk point of view. If I like what the committee suggested in health, for instance, we should look at it. Every intervention that we make, obviously put a risk metric. What will it mean if Eskom does not, or Eskom will not be able to roll out the solar heater? The department always have a plan B. Now, in this case, we only thought of plan B when 1.2 billion is lying idle in the system somewhere. Chair, I don't know. I think I've dealt with most questions, and if not, I'm more than happy to address them. Thank you.
Yes. I think there are two more hands. Members, if you could be brief, because we are just about going into 1:30. Yes. Honorable Shoppers, call and shake him up.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm happy with what Treasury has said. I just want to plead with them to assist structures called, I don't know whether you call them MPECs or in the municipality, HOPAs in municipalities, so that you give them some, you know, some recognition of some kind, because I interact with a number of municipalities in my area, and they tell me that they've got challenges because it seems councils don't take them seriously. They even tell them that, you know, actually, even your salary, we still have to decide. They decide forever. It seems it's a committee that needs some assistance from maybe from yourself. That is one. Two, the second one is, I really appreciate the fact that you say we are a small developing economy. We cannot copy from, we cannot be compared with America and the UK. We shouldn't really maybe copy from them. But I think you are 100% right to say we mustn't copy from America, because their economy is very much in trouble. If you can read the most cited economist of our time, Professor Joseph Stiglitz, just follow him up, you will hear what the amount of troubles they have in the USA. But on the side of the UK, I think we must copy the way they protected their industry. That is why they developed to the size of industrialization that is. If you can read Hajun Chang, he's one of the professors in Cambridge University in the development economics, you will be able to see that we really need to do what Britain has done. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. So I just go to my question. I just want to concur with my colleague here. MPEC gets no respect at all from council, from the municipal manager and anybody. They don't respect them. They don't want to listen to them. They don't want to report to them. They want to do very little or nothing. I actually brought this up with Treasury many a times, but I can tell you that it's just not going anywhere, and that's one of the challenges. This issue of the back pay affecting the filling of the vacancies and things because of the increment in the back pay that you have to pay, is this not going to be an annual thing, or is this not going to be a repeated thing, because every year you are entering into these negotiations and the processes are delayed, then the back pays are paid after a period of time. So is this not going to be an ongoing thing? I just want to know, Chair. Thank you.
Briefly? Thank you. No, it's not. It's not, it's not going to be an ongoing thing, because we've got 3-year wage deals, and the 3-year gives us enough time to plan properly and to... So the kind of estimates, you know, that is built in. The carry-through costs, we call them, are built in, and so I don't have... And on the impact, yes, we will pass it on, and I think maybe something that must bring to the attention of budget and budget for us. Thanks. And the two will make sure that we look at... Stiglitz and then Mr. Chang. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you very much for that engagement, honorable members. It's always exciting when you take keen interest in what this department is saying. So we you and the department realizes now that sometimes we need a lot more time than just the 2.5 hours that we've had, and we at some point we must look at how we deal with issues of time. Of course, we are constrained as well by parliamentary programs. Now, having said that, I think it would be proper to thank the National Treasury for your presence and engagement. We will be communicating with you because we are meeting the department soon, so that you make yourselves available for further engagement. We will now allow you to leave, and members, I think we have one more item to deal with, and that's the minutes. Very quickly, I don't want, thank you very much. I don't want you to starve because the dining facilities will soon close before you get there. So let's quickly get to the, I think we have one, yeah, the 5th of April, which we must pass. And I'm sure members would have seen that in your correspondence. So let's quickly go through that. First page. That's when we had the budget, the parliamentary budget office here with us, dealing with the alignment with and progress with the national plan. Yes, the Honourable Chair.
Chair, just to say, and I say this respectfully and without trying to be insensitive, now, Honourable Nyalungu is ill. And I see we've got it under apologies. He said right, because, you know, now she's been ill for a while, and I'm not so sure if apologies is the right place where it belongs. I'm just asking just a question.
Yes. Honourable Nyalungu is, I must say, she's been critically ill. And we are informed that she is getting a bit better and probably will rejoin the committee in about a month's time or so. And we have been receiving medical certificates to support the apology. Yes. Honourable
Chair, I will suggest that next to the apology and after the name of Honourable Nyalungu, we just put in brackets indisposed. In this course. Thank you.
Well, explain that to Shaky Man. Sounds not quite nice.
No, that's the term they normally use if you're ill for a period of time. You just put in this course because she's medically.
Yeah. Manana, you want to intervene?
Yeah, Chairperson, I think there's nothing wrong with this, with the minutes. Honorable Nyalung is sick. It was reported to the committee, and we were told he's going to be back in the middle of May. So I don't think we need to write anything rather than this one.
I think let's just leave it at that. I have indicated to you that we've been receiving medical certificates to support the apology. Yeah. On the second page, page 3.
Okay.
Yes, or no?
To the bottom, and I hope you agree with me on this one. The summary of decisions, there was a presentation by the PBO. Surely that wasn't the only decision we made for that meeting, was just to approve the minutes. So could we not also include the other decisions based on what the PBO presented?
Yes, Secretary, are there any
further decisions that you think needed to have been included?
Chairperson, we didn't pick up any other decisions other than the management board adopted. But if Dr. Fili has any specific decision that he picked up, he should just notify or indicate to us. Thanks.
Okay, Dr. Fili?
I'll do that in writing.
Okay. And maybe let's just allow members to all of you, if you think there are decisions that must be included here, just forward those to the secretariat, and then we will we will ask them to include those decisions there. But for now, I think we can adopt the minutes. They must just alert us once those the suggested decisions are included. Darren?
Chairperson, if there are any additional decisions which we might have omitted, I think it would be proper for us to postpone the adoption of the minutes up until we receive such decisions from the members. It's going to be difficult for us to insert decisions and then the other people, the other committee members haven't seen the decisions and then we say the minutes were adopted.
Okay, I think that's fair. Let's suspend the adoption of the minutes until members have made submissions. Then we can look at them next. Yes, Honourable.
Okay, just for progress. I just questioned it, and the response from the secretary was that there were no other decisions, so we can continue as though that was the only decisions we made for we took at that meeting. I'm okay with that.
Look, there might have been issues that we were saying to the PPO they must go and look into further. And I know that members have often said that to everyone else. So if those issues are there that we might have asked the PPO to go and look into for further engagement, let us include those here. Members must just refer those to the secretariat. We include them and then we can adopt, so that we don't lose what we need to follow up all the time. I think that's the spirit of what we are saying. Okay. Thank you very much. We will relook at the minutes not tomorrow, because it might not be easy for them to redo the minutes as quickly as today, but they will bring them back here, because tomorrow we have a meeting as well. If I may remind members, the Chief Procurement Officer, who is going to be with us here today from National Treasury, okay, starting at 9:30. The same venue here. Okay. Thank you very much, members, for your attendance, and I wish to also thank our support staff. Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.